All right, let's go ahead and get started. Thanks for attending tonight. It's always good to see folks get involved in the public process, so thank you for attending and showing up. First, we'll start with some introductions, and I'd like to recognize Carl Hirsch from the Wildlife Board. Thanks for being here, Carl. I'll go ahead and start over here with Ken and introduce yourselves and who you represent.
Ken Strong, sportsman's rep.
Joshua Leonard, sportsman's rep.
Mike Christensen, at large.
AJ Maurer, agriculture.
Ben Lauder, public at large.
George Garcia, Forest Service.
Dan Potts, non-consumptive.
Christine Schmitz, non-consumptive.
All right, thank you. And I'm Chris Marble. I'm the RAC chair, and I represent public at large. Okay, so we'll go over the procedure really quick. Most of you are probably familiar with it, but it's always good to review it once in a while. So the format of our meeting tonight will be on each agenda item, the DWR will give their recommendations. The RAC members will then have an opportunity to ask any questions. This is a question-only period. And then the public, anybody from the public, will have the opportunity to go ahead and stand up and ask any questions. Please make sure when you stand up, come up to the mic. This is a public meeting, and everything is recorded, so please come up to the microphone and state your name. And if you represent an organization, please mention that at the time, but please don't make any comments during that period. That period is just for questions. After the questions, then we'll go to public comments. So if anybody wants to make a comment, you have your card there. So if anybody wants to make a comment on any of the agenda items tonight, please grab a yellow card and fill it out and bring it on up here. After the public has an opportunity to state your comments, then we will come back to the RAC for any other comments or motions at that time. Okay, so now that that's out of the way, let's move right along. Has everybody had a chance to look at the minutes from the last meeting and look at the agenda today? If so, could I get a motion? Anybody?
I'll make a motion. We accept the minutes.
All right, thanks, Ken.
I'll second that.
All right, motion by Ken, seconded by George. All in favor? All right, that was unanimous. And a unanimous vote is going to be 8 tonight. All right. All right, we'll go on over to the board meeting updates from the last board meeting on May 31st. This is a really easy update to give. The wild turkey recommendations and rule amendments passed unanimously as presented. Same with the coyote bounty program amendments. Same can be said for the Mineral Mountain Bighorn Sheep Plan, except for that one passed 5-1. Calvin Crandall wanted an MOU in place first, but it did pass. The proposed rule amendments to conservation and sportsmen's permits rules passed unanimously. The proposed rule amendments repealing the certification review committee and error committee under walk-in access, error committee, walk-in access advisory committee, and variance committee all passed unanimously. Conservation permit list for 1 and 3 years passed unanimously. Same with the Box Elder Pilot Mountain season date change. Scales and tails, the prohibited species variance request passed unanimously, as well as there was a wildlife board stipulation and order that passed unanimously as well. And that's all I have for any board updates, unless I missed anything, Jason. All right, great. So I'll pass it over to you for the regional update.
All right, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. I've got a few things I want to run through for our RAC members tonight, just to update what's going on in the region or what has gone on. Right now, our wildlife biologists are in the middle of their elk and pronghorn classifications. So they've been up on the mountain and down in the desert gathering information on elk and pronghorn. One of the things that's been interesting this year is, despite the lack of water that we've had throughout the state, our depredation and nuisance issues, primarily with bear, moose, and cougar, have been about normal. Oftentimes, when we have droughts or lack of rain, sometimes those instances will increase, especially with nuisance, with bear or cougar coming down into communities. But this year, it's been pretty good. It hasn't overtaxed us. And also one other thing for the biologists, they're finishing their updates for their deer unit management plans. Of course, those plans are going to be presented for review in the RAC in an upcoming RAC. So those will be coming up in a couple months. In aquatics, we're receiving quite a few good fishing reports from Jordan L Reservoir, especially. 3 years ago, we stocked the reservoir with kokanee salmon. Last year, we had a few of those running up the stream to spawn. This summer, we're really getting a lot that are getting picked up by fishermen. So if you want a hot spot to go catch some kokanee, they're picking them up on Jordan L. Along with that, this coming fall, as in the past at Strawberry, we'll also have a kokanee viewing day at Jordan L Reservoir. So we'll have one at Strawberry this year and one at Jordan L. So we're excited about those fish in Jordan L. It's a great opportunity for anglers to get out there and catch some fish. In our law enforcement section, there's been quite a bit of shuffling throughout the region. We've had three officers that have left, two of them more recently. Tate Larson left to pursue other opportunities, and Brandon Olson, who is stationed in Strawberry District, has moved to another district up in Camas. But we have had a new officer come in to cover our Hobble Creek area, and his name is James Thomas. He's been with the division for 5 years. He's coming out of Emory County. We're excited to have James on in the Hobble Creek District. One of the things that's really been taking a lot of our time, both in law enforcement and aquatics this year, has been quagga mussels. We've been interdicting quite a few boats at different ramps, Deer Creek, Jordan L, even Utah Lake, of boats that have had quagga mussels on them. Primarily, these boats are coming out of Lake Powell and making it all the way up into Utah County. We do check these boats to make sure they don't have the quagga mussels. The quagga mussels are not established in any other water except for Lake Powell, and we don't want them in any other waters in Utah. They can cause real havoc on any of the systems that we have here. So if you're a boater, please, and go to Lake Powell, please remember to clean, drain, and dry your boats, and make sure that you're not transporting those quagga mussels. Hunting season is quickly approaching. We've got the archery hunts coming up here beginning August 18th. And just a reminder to everybody, if you do see something that's questionable out in the field, if you see something that kind of some suspicious activity or poaching, please, there's a multitude of ways to contact the division. Phone lines, emails, UTIP lines. If you see anything like that, please let us know. Along with hunting season, if you're a dedicated hunter and you're going to archery hunt, the time's pretty short right now to get your dedicated hunter hours in and get your archery tag. Like I said, August 17th will be the last day before the archery hunt begins, and we usually get a big rush of people that week trying to get their hours turned in. So beat the crowds, beat the rush, and get your hours turned in. If you still have some work that needs to be done, there's one thing that's a great opportunity. There's quite a few things are great opportunities. You can find out all those opportunities on our webpage. They're all listed on there. You can sign up for events and get your hours taken care of. One of the things, if you're not a bow hunter, is the state fair is coming up in August, and we're always looking for people to help out at the state fair. If you're a dedicated hunter, you get hours towards your program for that. We have a fishing pond for the youth. This year I think it's going to be stocked with catfish. So if you like to fish and need some hours and want to work with the youth, we'd love to have you there. Whether dedicated hunter or not, all volunteers are welcome. And if you've been in Springville or driven through the town or came from the north end of town, you've probably seen quite a mess up there where our regional office is. It's for the better for us. We're right in the middle of tearing down our old facility and building a new regional office there. In fact, next week we're going to be moving out of our current regional office into a smaller building just to the north of that. So we're still going to be open for business. We're still going to be able to sell licenses and have contact with the public out of that office. Might be a little small and a little messy for about a year, but we anticipate being in our new building in June of 2019. So we're pretty excited about that. With that move that's coming up, we're going to be into our temporary building. We're going to have some days where we're going to have some limited access and may not have all the services that we typically provide. Next week on Wednesday and Thursday, our internet's going to be down, so we can take phone calls and we can do everything else, but if we have to access the internet or sell permits or get your DH hours in, that's going to be pretty tough for us. We'll have to send you somewhere else. On Friday of next week, we will be closed because we'll have limited access to everything on that day. So it's pretty unique to have our office closed. We're not sure what to do with ourselves. Probably we'll find something, but just keep in mind that we're going to be closed on next Friday and spread the word. Mr. Chair, with that, that's really all I have to share tonight, unless there's any questions from the RAC. Ken?
I got one. I was just in a meeting up Salt Lake today, and we was talking about quagga mussel, like you said, and I think last year they picked up about two or three boats is all had mussel on it. So far this year, we're over 50.
We're over 65 now. We've had a couple more come in. So it's been a huge issue. It's been a big problem. And, you know, it's something that we're struggling to deal with. We're trying to come up with a better action plan, both on our end where we interdict the boats, and hopefully we can work with Lake Powell and the folks down there to catch some more of these before they get up into Utah County. But it has been a huge issue. We're extremely concerned about it.
Okay, any other questions? All right, thank you for the update. Very appreciated. All right, we'll jump right in. And we'll start with the fur bearer rule amendments. And Darren.
This is kind of weird, but I'll try to make it work. Thanks, everybody. I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk about some recommended changes tonight. I want to start with our fur bearer and trapping rule recommendations for this coming season. Last year at this time, we brought this rule around, and many of you may remember that there was quite a bit of discussion around the rule, and one of the things that we overlooked in that process was making sure that we had engaged sufficiently with livestock interests and private landowners. And that became very clear through the RAC process and also at the board meeting. One of the things that we committed to do at the board when they passed the changes that we made last year is to convene a committee and make sure that those voices that were underrepresented had a chance to look at the rule and maybe try to find some solutions to their concerns. So we did that fairly quickly after the board meeting last year, so almost just a little bit short of a year ago that committee was brought together, and we had that discussion. This is just a list of the stakeholders that were invited to attend that meeting. Leave that up for a second. And so we got together. Not everybody on that list was able to be at the meeting that night, but we tried to engage after the fact as well with some of the folks that weren't there. The committee had some objectives, and these are not different than what we wanted to try to achieve with the rule changes we made last year. We all agreed that we'd try to make changes that still allowed us to accomplish these objectives in the plan. The first is to address the concerns of livestock producers, and specifically when they're trying to protect herds from coyotes. That was really the thing that was the most concern. The second thing was to allow the live release of protected species caught in coyote and raccoon traps. As you may remember from last year, a relatively recent study out of the Association for Fish and Wildlife Agencies indicated that about 25% of the animals caught in a coyote set can be an on-target species. And so we are concerned that people have the opportunity to let animals go that they didn't intend to catch. The next was to encourage public support for trapping. A lot of the sociological research in trapping indicates that people are generally in favor of trapping, and the things that encourage public support are that it's regulated. There's an opportunity to release non-target animals unharmed, and so those are the things that the rule tries to accomplish. And finally, we wanted to provide some legal protection to people who are following the rules but accidentally catch something that they didn't intend to catch in a coyote or raccoon trap. So we had a fair amount of discussion, good back and forth, but it became clear fairly quickly that the biggest concern that the wool growers had and the Farm Bureau and agriculture was that it was difficult for them to comply with the 48-hour checklist and still try to do all the things they had to do with their sheep and other things. And most of these guys have herders that are with the herds 24/7. But a lot of times they're from Peru or Ecuador, and it's difficult to get them a permit and then have to have them have a trapping license to mark the traps with those numbers. And so what the group decided was that if there was a way to allow a person who owned the traps to designate another person to check their traps, that would solve the problem and that would alleviate their concerns. And so these are the recommendations we're making tonight. First of all, to allow the owner of a trap to designate another person to check and remove wildlife from their traps, provided these things: that the traps are appropriately marked with the owner's trap registration number, the person has the required licenses when working with fur bear sets. So this is just if you're actually trapping fur bears. This doesn't include coyotes and raccoons. They're still non-protected species in Utah. So if you're trapping for coyotes, you don't need any other license. That a person does not have a denied or suspended trap registration license. We want to make sure that if someone's revoked because they've been a bad actor, that this isn't a way they can get around not having a license. They can't have someone else allow them to go out. They have written authorization from the owner of the traps, and they have that with them in the field. And finally, the owner assumes liability for that person. So if they're breaking the law criminally or civilly, you know, trespassing, things like that, that if you've given them permission to check your traps, then you'd be liable for their actions. And that was the big one out of the committee that you know, to try to address the concerns with the board. There are a couple other recommendations we're making to the rule. First of all, that we acknowledge in the rule in writing that coyotes and raccoons are regulated by the Utah Department of Agriculture. We want to make it really clear that the division does not have management authority for those species in the rule. And finally, although the division's role is to conserve, protect wildlife, and establish the regulations to do so, that's our authority through code. Any references to coyotes or raccoons in this rule is strictly to identify the types of traps that a person would use to capture those animals and is not an attempt from the Division of Wildlife Resources to regulate those species specifically. We put some clarifying language in there about bobcat and who can legally euthanize a bobcat caught in a trapping device. There was a case recently where there was some confusion about who could do that, and we felt like the rules needed to be tightened up a little bit just so it was fairly clear. And you can see that in your red line copy if you want to. We can look at the actual language on that. But basically, if it's your trap and it's your bobcat and you're putting your tag on it, you're the person who has to kill it. You can't have someone else do it for you and then put your tag on it. If they kill it, they have to have their own tag and license. And finally, we clarified the language in there about people with domestic pets that might be caught in a trap in the field. The way it was before, it included domestic pet owners along with wildlife officers, and it made it sound like if a person's pet got caught in a trap, that they then were authorized by the rule to take that gear and remove it from the field. And that was not the intent of the rule. So this just clarifies if you're in the field and a domestic pet is caught in a trap, you have authorization to remove your pet from the trap, but you can't disturb the device or take it. You know, so that's someone else's property. So we just wanted to clarify that. And that's it for recommended changes.
Thank you, Darren. Do we have any questions from RAC members? I've got one question, Darren. So you mentioned in the rule amendment, just to clarify, you talk about the designated person that you have. Mm-hmm. The owner of the set or the, I don't know what you call them, the primary permit holder,
right,
of the set assumes legal and civil liability. I assume that also includes the designated person as well.
Right. That, I mean, obviously it would depend on what actually happened and what the case was, but I think we just want, and actually this language was kind of in rule before, but we just want to make sure that the RAC was aware, and we changed it a little bit. But yeah, if you're going to authorize a person to act on your behalf, you know, you need to make sure that they're doing it right.
Just want to make sure the designated person was also on the hook.
Sure. I have one question.
Go ahead, Mike.
In the slide you showed, it said the owner of the trap has to have the licenses.
Right.
And you referred to it as the person. But then down in the bullet points, it talks about the owner. And then it also talks about the person. And those bullet points is the person, the owner. So what I'm getting at is, does the designated person have to have a trapping license?
No.
Or anything like that?
Right.
Okay.
So, yeah, I can see how that was a little bit confusing. So, in this case, under the bullet points, we're talking about the owner is the person that has a trapping license and has their number on the trap, and then the person they designate can then go check. They don't need any additional. If they're trapping for coyotes, all they need is the permission from the trap owner to do that.
Any other questions? All right, thank you. I'll turn it over to the public. Anybody, members of the public, have any questions they'd like to ask? No takers. All right. Go ahead and go into the comment period.
This is for bears. I'm not sure who wants this. Number six.
Okay. Al Rob. You mentioned you wanted to talk about fur bears. Was it this topic or the next topic? Okay, thank you. So we don't have no comments, so I'll turn it back over to the RAC for comments and a motion if you'd like to make one. Any motions?
I'll make a motion that we accept as presented.
All right. Thanks, Ken. Seconded by Ben. All in favor? That's unanimous. All right. Darren, it looks like you're still up. Talk about fur bear and bobcat harvest recommendations, 2018-2019.
All right, moving so from the rule to the recommendations. Hold on a second. There we go. Okay. Just quickly, most of this presentation is going to focus on bobcats. We have a management plan for bobcats, but it also includes some season recommendations for fur bears. Just a quick reminder how we manage bobcats in the state. They're managed according to the bobcat management plan, which came out of a committee and was recommended to the Wildlife Board and then adopted by the board. In that plan, we have three management criteria that we look at each year for bobcats. And the way that the plan works is that if two of those parameters are outside of the boundary that we're looking at in the plan in a negative way, in other words, detrimental to bobcat populations, that we would make changes either to shorten seasons or limit permits. So that's at the end of all this, that's the thing we're looking for. How many of these are in within parameters and how many are outside? The first criteria that we look at are the number of juveniles in the harvest. And the intent here is to make sure that we're seeing a reproducing bobcat population and that it's capable of replacing itself and maintaining and either being stable or growing. We want to see that target be somewhere between 42% and 56%. If it's higher than that, that's fine. That just means there's more juveniles in the population. They've had a good reproductive year. So we wouldn't make any changes in that case. If it's lower than 42%, that indicates low reproduction, and so we'd want to look at making changes to limit harvest. So here's the data for that parameter since 1999. The two dotted or dashed lines in red are the target parameters, the upper and lower target. And the blue line is where the percentage of juveniles in the harvest has fallen over that time period. So we, you know, the last 5 years we've been either within that range or above it. And this year we're within the range. The next criteria is adult survival. So we use bobcats in the harvest to calculate adult survival. And the idea here is that we want to make sure we've got enough adults in the population to maintain or increase the population size. And the target here is between 65 and 72% survival, annual survival. So again, here, if it's higher than that, that's fine. That just means that we've got a lot of adults and they're surviving. If it's lower than that, that indicates something that we should be taking a look at. So here's the data for adult survival over the same time period. Again, the dashed red lines is the target range. The blue line is the data. You can see last year we were right on the lower bounds, and this year we are below that. So this one is one parameter out of three that falls below our recommendations in a negative way. So that's something that we look at. The final parameter is percent females in the harvest. And again, this is just to make sure that we maintain an acceptable number of females in the population to continue breeding and replenishing the population. We want this target to be between 41% and 45%. In this case, lower is okay. That just indicates that you're taking fewer females. But higher higher than that, you're probably taking too many out of the population, and you should be looking at possibly making changes there. So this is these are the data, again, for that parameter. And you can see that did jump up last year. Again, adult or proportion of females in the harvest, when that goes up, that's something to watch. But it does fall within the recommended bounds. So as I mentioned before, in the plan, when more than two of those are outside, we'd make recommended changes to either permits or seasons. Now this year, two of them are within, and one of them is out. So according to the plan, we're not making any recommended changes to either the seasons or the number of permits that people can get this year. So what that means is six tags per individual. The season is from the 14th of November through the 1st of March, and there's no cap on the number of permits sold. And then season dates for other fur-bearing species, beaver and mink, were recommended. This is just a change to the calendar year, same seasons as it was last year for both, just adjusting for the calendar. And that's all I have.
All right, thank you, Darren. Any questions from rack members? No. Cool. Go ahead, Mike.
Does it concern you, Darren, that the trends are all going the wrong way?
Yeah, it's obviously something that we'll be looking at. The way the plan is set up, that, you know, once it falls below, so obviously the trends, you notice the trends, and we may see some changes next year if it continues on that path. I think probably what's driving this is a decline in rabbit populations. We've seen a fairly significant decline in the prey base, and so you'd expect to see that predator population follow that. So the plan is set up to be sensitive to that, and as long as it's within the bounds according to the plan, we're okay. But again, yeah, that's definitely something we're watching.
I have a question. You said during the your coyote talk that about 25% of sets are targeting coyotes aren't actually catching coyotes. What percent of that I've got bobcats being caught in coyote sets?
I don't know that they teased that out. They just said non-target. But one thing we do know from our data is that about 40% of badgers that are caught in the state are caught while someone's trapping for something else. They don't indicate what they're trapping by, so it could be bobcats, but it could be coyotes. It's probably more likely to be coyotes. And same thing for gray foxes too, I think. So those are both, may not be foxes. I probably ought to check. In fact, I've got the data if you want to look at it later. But again, there, you put a set out, you may catch something else, and in order to catch a badger, you've got to have a fur bearer license, and so we want to make sure that people can let that animal go if they're not intending to keep it.
Yeah, I guess that was my bigger question, because if you said one of the recommendations was to release animals that are able, do you see more people coyote trapping with snares or leg holds?
I think they use both. I don't know if the trappers have a sense for mostly leg holds. Yeah.
So there's a chance those bobcats can go free then.
Right.
The snares, yeah.
And for non-lethal sets, it's a 48-hour check time. For lethal sets, it's 96.
Yeah. All right, thanks.
Yep. All right, any other questions? Okay, great. Turn it over to public for any questions. No questions. All right, we'll jump right into the comment period. Al Robb, you're up.
Al Robb, Utah Trappers Association. The only thing I wanted to recommend was pertaining to the other fur bearers, beaver and mink, badger, gray fox, and kit fox, and those listed there. with a season start recommended of September 22nd. I would like to see that October 22nd. These fur bears, their fur is not even close to being prime. And I'd like to see that set back a month so they have a better chance. Furs are not saleable at that point. And it's, to me, it's kind of a waste of the resource as far as that part of it goes. So I would like to recommend a October 22nd start on both of those seasons for those species.
All right. Thanks, Al.
Thank you.
All right. I'll start it over. Okay. Bryce, is it piling? Hope I got that right.
Bryce Pelling, Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. We support the division's recommendations on the trapping. That's all I'd like to say.
All right, thanks, Bryce. Yeah. I'm sorry for getting your name wrong. Okay. That's all we've got for comment cards, so I'll take it back to the rack for discussion. Go ahead, Mike.
Along the lines of making that a later start date, is there a case, do you see cases where there's problems with other public getting involved with your sets? I mean, if it was moved later, would it take away any conflicts or anything like that? I mean, has that been an issue?
That's really not a concern.
Okay.
Hey, Darren, what's your thoughts on moving that season?
I haven't had a lot of time to think about it, but I don't disagree with what Al said about fur being prime. I think, you know, usually as managers, what we try to do is, you know, allow people a reasonable window to go and engage in these activities. I think I mentioned to Al that, you know, if you know what you're doing, you're probably waiting anyway. But from a biological standpoint, I can't think of a reason why it would make much of a difference to go earlier or later in terms of population management.
Right.
Does it matter one way or the other?
Okay. Thanks, Darren. All right. Any other?
Kind of a follow-up question. we trapped a lot growing up as kids, and I don't do it anymore, but do you find that people are trapping still to sell the fur, or like in the case of, you know, badger, skunk, just trapping to get rid of them? I mean, are they actually taking them to market and selling them?
Yeah, I think they do both, and I think people that really do it a lot are selling the furs and taking care of them. But again, and that might be a good point. You know, if you're trying to manage for the species, but you're not selling the fur, a little bit earlier opener might help a little bit. But usually that late in the season with most livestock, they're pretty, with these species, that's not probably a huge concern. But with coyotes,
yeah,
there's no season on coyotes.
And then does it have to be all one fell swoop? For example, does marten and weasel have to be tied in with skunk and badger?
No, it's just, one thing that we do like to do is simplify things. And so, you know, having different opening dates for different species gets kind of, you know, if you don't have to, I'd prefer not to do that.
Yeah, thanks.
Ken, just one sec. Darren, I got another question. Sorry, I wanted to grab you before you sat down.
No, you're fine.
So what would you anticipate as far as social blowback for moving that date?
I haven't had a lot of, you know, time to think
sure.
about it,
yeah,
but I suspect that there are some folks that would feel like moving it back a month would be undesirable, but I don't know for sure.
How does the current opening date compare to traditional opening date?
As far as I know, I don't think it's changed much. But we've got some guys that have a lot more experience than I do, and is it pretty much that way for a while?
Generally, in the past, we've always recommended an October start date because of the fur primers. There is a market, definitely, if anyone came to our first table,
okay,
they would see these species there. The two biggest markets for them is like our fur sale and taxidermy.
Okay.
And all you get for a taxidermist, you want, if you're doing it for sale, you probably want a gift drawing fur. So what's its best? And as far as the market for going first sale end of it, you want as dry material as you can get because it brings you top dollar.
Yeah. So on the it sounds like for the purposes of selling fur, you know, it'd be more desirable to start later. And again, the only thing I could think of is, you know, if you're doing some kind of control effort, it might be advantageous to have a little bit extra time. But you know, just off the top of my head, that'd be what I would say.
All right, thanks, Darren. Ken?
Well, here's the problem we're running into on not just the not just this issue, but other issues in the state, and that's we complicate things. And if a person's out there to catch fur, prime fur to sell, they know when to go, and that's when they would start their trapping. If somebody's just out there to trap, that's a different story. But I think we need to think about keeping it simple and all the start dates together so that people understand that we run into this in all kinds of issues, and I think we just need to keep it simple and start them all at the same time.
Yes. Go ahead, Ben.
So here's my take. I'm mostly with Ken. The one point I disagree with you on, Ken, is I don't care about complexity. It's 2018 and we all have computers and phones and smartphones, and different start dates don't bother me. I think for proper management, that's better than simplicity. That's my personal opinion. That said, I do agree with you, Ken, that we should keep the start dates the same, and the reason that I believe that is exactly what you said, in that if just because we have an opening date doesn't mean you have to set your traps out that day. If you're a trapper that's looking for prime fur, you can self-regulate and set them out later, as late as you want. There's no, you don't have to start on day one. So for flexibility and opportunity, I would prefer to keep the date as is.
All right, thanks, Ben. Any other comments? All right, can we get a motion?
Move to approve as presented.
All right. Got a motion to approve as presented from Ben.
I'll second it.
Seconded by Ken. All in favor? Okay, 7 in favor. All opposed? 1 opposed. All right, motion passes 7-1. All right.
All right, now that we have the things people are passionate about out of the way, we can move on to something a little less controversial.
Let's talk cougars. Ben and Ken, yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So the next item I want to present are our mountain lion recommendations for the 2019 season, 2018-19 season. And similar to what I did with bobcats, I want to quickly just kind of refresh everybody's memory on how the division manages mountain lions in the state. First of all, lions are managed in accordance with the Utah Cougar Management Plan. That plan was enacted in 2015, and it's intended to run through 2025 with periodic reviews within that time frame. That plan was established and put together by the Cougar Advisory Group. This was a group of various stakeholders across the spectrum of people who are passionate about mountain lions and people who are concerned about what mountain lions can do to livestock, or their livestock and livelihood, and they were all on that board. They met multiple times for long meetings. They spent a lot of time with professors from USU looking at the latest in cougar management, the latest that was out there in the 2014 range. So they looked at a lot of things. They devised a plan, and that plan was then presented to the Wildlife Board and adopted by the board. And so the Division of Wildlife Resources then manages to that plan. The overarching goal of the plan is to maintain a healthy cougar population within their current distribution in the state, while at the same time considering human safety, economic concerns, other wildlife species needs, and maintaining hunting traditions. And we define a healthy cougar population as one that maintains a reasonable proportion of older age animals, breeding females, healthy individuals, a population in balance with its natural prey base, and genetic variability. And that has some connection to connectedness in order to keep not having isolated populations. So the plan recommends two management parameters for mountain lions, and these are the two things that we're managing for, and we manage on a unit-by-unit basis. So these decisions are made by a district biologist in a region on a unit-by-unit basis. And then the overall recommendation that you'll see tonight is really just the sum of those individual recommendations. There isn't a statewide recommendation that drives this other than these management parameters. The first parameter is that, and this is data compiled over a three-year period, less than 40% females in the harvest over the previous 3 years. The second parameter is maintaining or the percent of adults 5 years and older in the harvest over the last 3 years is between 15 and 20%. The other thing that the plan allows for is adjustments for units that have prey populations that are under objective, and it also directs us to take into account livestock depredation and to try to mitigate for that as well. There are three season structures that we use to hunt mountain lions. The first are limited entry units, and these are just like big game units where there's a certain number of permits that are allocated. A person has to put into a draw in order to draw one of those permits. If they draw a permit, they can hunt on the unit. There's a season, and when the season ends, everybody's done, whether they harvest a lion or not. The next season structure is what we call a split, and this is actually a hybrid type of opportunity between the limited entry and harvest objective. On these units, you start limited entry, so again, people can draw a permit. Say there's 10 available for a unit. 10 people get those permits. They get to hunt during the limited entry portion of that season. Once the season ends, any of those 10 mountain lions that weren't harvested on those permits then would be open for harvest objective. And anybody could buy a permit over the counter to hunt that unit. But once the 10 lions are taken, the unit closes. And then the last is a harvest objective unit where the biologist sets a number of mountain lions that they feel like need to be harvested or that the unit can sustain. And that opens to the permits that a person can purchase over the counter. And again, once that objective is met, then the unit closes and nobody else can hunt there. And finally, we have pursuit seasons. And on these, for these seasons, there's a season date. A person is not authorized to kill a lion, but they can pursue the lion and tree it. But again, they're not allowed to remove the lion or kill it. So let's look at a little bit of data. That graph is a little bit... Probably should have chosen a little different color. So what this is historical hunter harvest. The light blue line is just total mountain lion harvest over the years. This starts in 1990 and runs through last year. You can see that, you know, probably peak recently was in the mid-90s. So we were taking the most lions. There was a management plan instituted in about 2000 that changed some of the parameters we look at. And you can see that harvest sort of dropped off. And over the last few years, we've seen an increase in overall harvest. The other two lines, the blue line, are males in the harvest. And the pink line are females in the harvest. And you kind of see how those have varied. Ideally, you want, again, with that 40% females in the harvest, you'd want your female harvest to be lower than your male harvest. And you can see most of the increase over the last 4 years has been among males, but there was a bit of an uptick this year, this last season, in females. This next graphic pertains to the 40% female target. So that red dashed line is our management target. We want females in the harvest to be below that percentage. And so the pink part represents the percent of females, and the blue is percent of males. So you can see since about 2008, about the last 10 years, we've been under that. And actually, the trend is decreasing, although there was a little bit of a tick up over the last year. One more thing that's important that we look at is livestock depredation. And so this is a representation of two things. One, the blue line represents the number of incidences of livestock depredation in the state. An incidence is when a livestock producer finds a dead animal or animals. They suspect that it's a mountain lion kill. They call Wildlife Services, who then will come and verify. If they verify that it's a lion kill, that's what we call an incident. So the number of those that occur in a year, those call-outs and verifications. The red line are the number of mountain lions that Wildlife Services takes as a result of those incidences. So if a mountain lion's killing sheep, they'll typically go out, they'll try to catch the individual animal that's doing the damage. Sometimes they are successful and sometimes they aren't. And so you can see over the last 4 years we have seen an increase in livestock depredation. And some of the recommendations you'll see tonight are taking this into account with the recommended permit numbers. So let's go through the individual units. I think just in the interest of time, I'll point out the changes. And obviously, if you have any questions about specific units, I'd be happy to go back and get into more detail on those. So first of all, we're recommending, this is the northern region, we're recommending an increase of permits in the Box Elder Desert from 5 to 10. And changing that hunt structure from a split unit to a harvest objective unit. Box Elder Raft River, recommending increasing by 2 permits. Oh, one other thing I need to point out, I'm sorry. You'll see the column that says considered for predator management. In the plan, if a unit qualifies for predator management, I'll indicate here whether it does by the species that it qualifies for. And so BHS is bighorn sheep, and you'll see deer in here as well. Just because a unit qualifies for predator management doesn't necessarily mean that we're actually actively conducting predator, and predator management, I mean we're actually really trying to tamp down that lion population in order to, because we have concerns about that prey species. And usually for bighorn sheep, what happens is you have a relatively small number of animals, and if a mountain lion gets into a bighorn sheep herd, they can do a lot of damage fairly quickly because they don't have to kill very many to really have a population level effect. But in order to actually go above the management parameters in the plan, we have to write a formal predator management plan that identifies goals and objectives for that plan, when that plan will end, you know, what criteria have to be met in order to continue that plan. So, sorry, moving on, I think we talked about Raft River, right? Maybe. There we go.
Yeah, is there something specific on Raft River? I'll mention that.
This one, for Raft River, they're just within the management parameters. And so they would indicate they could sustain another couple permits there. They're way over on age, and they're fine on the females in the harvest, so they're just recommending more opportunity. East Canyon, we're recommending an increase of 5 and changing that from limited entry to split. If you break out the incidences of livestock damage by county, Morgan County and Summit County are two of the highest county, the counties with the highest incidences of cougar depredation. And so the biologists are making some adjustments here to try to account for that. And generally what happens is that Wildlife Services is taking additional mountain lions over and above what the sport harvest is. And if they're going to be taking lions, we'd rather shift that and allow sportsmen to take those mountain lions if we can. And so that's kind of what's going on there with East Canyon. So recommending an additional 5. They want to switch that to split so that they can ensure that those lions are taken. And also, it allows a landowner, after that limited entry season ends, to deal with their own problem. They can go get a permit over the counter as well. So that's the thinking behind that recommendation. And then Morgan Southridge, same thing, same changes. Ogden is actually below on the objectives. And so the region is recommending that we reduce by 1 tag, but also that we switch that from harvest objective to split. And the idea here is that if you have a limited entry season, people tend to be more selective. They're not out there with everybody else. And so they may pass on a female lion in a tree rather than feel like they're pressured to have to take it. So they want to see if those two changes will reduce the number of females in the harvest and get them back within management specs. No changes to any of these units. This is northeastern region now. On the South Slope Bonanza Diamond Mountain Vernal Unit, they're recommending an increase of 4. Wasatch Mountains of Enequin Wildcat, an increase of 5. The Current Creek North, an increase of 3. The Central Mountains, so we're in Central Region. Nebo West Face, increase of 3. Central Mountains Northwest, Manti, from 9 to 11. So 2. Central Mountains Southwest, Manti, from 12 to 18. Oker Stansberry, an increase of 2, and changing that from limited entry to split. On the Wasatch Mountains Cascade, this is again one that's below objective on females, so they're recommending a decrease of 1 permit. Same on the Timpanogos, they're recommending a decrease of 2 permits. And West Desert Tintic Vernon, increase of 3. Now into the southern region. Beaver from 9 to 13. On the Fillmore Pavant, they're recommending additional 5. The Kaperowitz, just so everybody understands, an unlimited unit has to qualify in a certain way. And usually these are bighorn sheep units, well, exclusively bighorn sheep units that don't have a lot of alternative prey. So there aren't a lot of deer around. If you do get a lion on that unit, that's about all they can really focus in on your bighorn sheep herds. They're also incredibly remote, and lion densities are very low. And so typically, the average harvest on those units is 0 of two. They don't take a lot of mountain lions out there. So it's unlimited, and sometimes that makes people nervous. But again, there aren't a lot of lions, and mainly the idea is if you're out there hunting something else and you see a lion, well, something else being sheep, and you see a lion while you're hunting sheep, then maybe you could have a permit to take that mountain lion. But in practice, it doesn't happen very often. And there's a few units like that in the state. So the Monroe, this is one where they've got some depredation and deer herd concerns. Adult survival has been declining on that mountain. So they're recommending an increase of 6 permits. And Panguitch Lake, 2. The Paunsagunt, there's a couple things they want to do there. And one is with season dates. We'll get to that in a minute. So they want to leave the permits the same, but they want to switch that to a split unit from a harvest objective unit. This is another unit where they're seeing an increase. So we have deer on the Paunsagunt that are collared. And so when one of those animals dies, the collar sends us a mortality signal, and we go out and try to determine what killed the deer. And we've seen a fairly steady increase in cause-specific mortality by lions. And so the region has some concerns, but they're not getting that quota met. They haven't met the 10. They're usually, you know, 4, 5, 6, something like that. So they're trying to change strategies up a little bit and see if they maybe can get a little bit more pressure down there. So switching to split again would in this case sort of, if you drew that tag, that's the only place you could hunt, so you'd have to go there. And that's a hard unit to hunt. Usually they don't get a lot of snow. And then the season dates we'll get to here in a minute. Pine Valley North increased by 2. Plateau Boulder increased by 2. Plateau Thousand Lakes, they'd like to switch that one to a split. You see there aren't very many permits there. This is another one where it's hard to hunt. They don't even with 4, they sometimes don't meet it. So again, they're trying to focus a little bit of pressure there. And increase of 3 on the Zion. On to the southeastern region, Buckcliffs Rattlesnake. That's again one of those unlimited units. Same reasoning as before. They're recommending on the northeast Manti an increase of 3 permits. On the southeast Manti, an increase of 4. No changes to any of these units. No changes to any of these units. And that's it for the unit by unit recommendations. Just in case you're wondering, how does that all break out? This sort of shows the trend over the last, since 2015. That's when we initiated the latest management plan. How that breaks out between limited entry or split seasons and harvest objective or quota kind of seasons. And so this just kind of shows what that trend is. We're sitting about 50-50 right now. About half the units are in harvest objective. The other half have some kind of limited entry component. So season dates. Unless it's in green here, it's the same season as last year, just adjusted for the calendar year. And so here is this Paunsagunt change that I mentioned. So they liked it to be this. So that again, changed from harvest objective to limited entry. They want the limited entry season to be the same as it is everywhere else. But once that opens up for harvest objective, they want to keep that instead of ending May 31st. They want to keep that unit open throughout the rest of the year. And the idea here is that most harvest objective and split units close somewhere in the February, March range. That's when the quota's met. So with the Paunsagunt, maybe a couple other units, that'd be kind of the only game in town in the state if you wanted to continue to hunt mountain lions through the summer. It's hard to hunt mountain lions in the summer. And so, but again, this is an effort to maybe focus a little bit more attention down there, and we'll just kind of have to see that how that works. But that's why we only want the Paunsagunt to have this season structure. All the other split units would fall under the normal season structure. harvest objective. Slight change here. Used to last year, unlimited seasons basically ran year round. Harvest objective had a 3-day window in between the end of the season and the beginning of the next. We didn't feel like there was a reason we did that, but we didn't think it was that critical, and so we're just proposing that those basically run year round. But of course, if you meet the objective, it would close. So if there's 10 permits and they kill 10 lions, then it closes whenever that date is. And finally, pursuit season, again, just adjusted for the calendar year. So that's all the stuff that you're voting on tonight. I just wanted to, there's a couple things, and I need to change my slide, but I just want to make everybody aware of, if you remember at the big game meetings in the fall, we made some changes to the archery tackle requirements, the poundage and things like that. We're going to change the lion rule just to reflect those changes. The board instructed us to make sure that was uniform across all of our rules, so that the archery tackle requirements for lions and bears and big game are all different. So that'll be a change we'll make. As per the board's instruction. The other thing I wanted to mention is we've just got the green light to begin a fairly comprehensive mountain lion study in the state. We're working through USU. It's going to be a 5-year PhD study looking at adult female survival, kitten survival. We're interested in looking at predator-prey interactions. The technology is really starting to allow us to do things with our studies that we haven't been able to do before. And so we'll be getting locations on these animals about every 2 hours and really be able to see how they're using the landscape, how they're interacting with their prey, and how they're we're interested in looking at how they interact with bears as well. And so we're pretty excited about that, and we'll keep you posted on how that's going. And then the other thing that I think might be interesting is a lot of the recommendations and all the plans that we use rely heavily on the Western Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies Managing Cougars in North America book. And we've just undertaken an effort across the West to do a second edition of that and incorporate some of the more recent data and studies into that volume. So again, that's something that is on the horizon fairly soon that we're looking forward to. And that's it.
Thanks, Darren. Any questions from the rack? Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, Darren. A couple of questions. First, I'm trying to figure out the difference between male and female issues, but also younger versus older males, right? That's a classic controversial issue.
Sure.
A typical range difference between, you know, we've seen data about, you know, a collared female cougar going all the way to Colorado and back to where she started. You know, that's amazing. So what would be the difference between ranges between, let's say, an old tom, you know, trophy category tom and a young of the year tom?
I think in general. Older toms tend to set up larger territories than younger animals. Usually, in a cougar population, you have females that sort of set up they set up territories that overlap a little bit with each other, but then also overlap by a male. And typically, that's the male that does the breeding. But you always have this kind of undercurrent of juveniles that are there, and they kind of get bounced around, and if they can find a place to be, so the juveniles are there, but typically, older males will hold on to more territory than younger ones.
So it's that the younger males might be moving more.
That, and I think they're less capable of defending a territory.
Yeah.
They can get beat up pretty easy.
And then also, what about the costs of dealing with cougar-human interactions? I think the division, is kind of required to take care of those kinds of problems, right? Cougar in somebody's backyard, and they got to move it. What's the costs to kind of dart or kill that kitty?
I don't know. It's probably tough to put a dollar amount on it, but it depends. Jason mentioned that some years are worse than others, and
no, I mean per cat,
right?
On the average, yeah.
That's a tough one, but let me just—it entails truck time and gasoline personnel time, and the drugs aren't cheap. But and then you've got to transport the animal and release it, and so it's expensive. I think for a mule deer, it costs. When we're doing these urban removals, it's probably $250 to $300, but that's with a lot of volunteer time, and so it can be pricey. But it doesn't happen very often either. So
that's all I had.
Any other questions?
Yeah, Darren, I have a couple of questions for you. It looks like where you had increases, you increased significantly, and where you had a decrease in numbers, it was real low.
Right. Well, usually on those, so those decreases, they're just starting to edge up above, and usually they've done two things. We can look at a couple of those. Sorry, it's further back than I thought. Well, this is the exception that to what I was going to say, but on the Wasatch Cascade, they're starting to decrease. There weren't a lot of permits to begin with. There're just five, and so a decrease of one is more significant in that situation, or by two when you only have seven. So we want to see what that does. So again, we look at it over 3 years, but when you have a low sample size, you know, there's a lot of variance in that. It just depends on how old or how many females they take, and that can jump around a lot. So, and the other one, which was the point that I was going to make, is the Ogden. Sorry. In this case, we only reduced by one, but we also split the strategy, or we also changed the strategy to try to see if we could get people to be a little more selective on that unit. The idea being, if they know they're not out there with the mob, maybe they'll pass on a female. They're more likely to pass on a female than to take it. So we did both there. We'll keep an eye on it and see if that works. If not, then we'll have to make further adjustments.
Okay. And then also on your predator management considerations, you know, it's obvious where you have deer, bighorn, sheep. So where it says no, you still showed increases in those units.
Right.
And that, again, is for livestock predation reasons.
No, in most of those cases, their female ages, their females in the harvest is below 40, in some cases way below. And if you look at, and I know it was an eye test, I put everything on one sheet in your packet. And so I apologize for that. If you can't read it, then I can get into the details. But in most of those cases, they're well within the management parameters, and so there's opportunity there to increase. And usually, in most of those cases, they're only increasing two or three. The ones where they've got some livestock concerns usually is something like 5 to 6, just sort of as a general rule.
Just to follow up on that question, I had the same question. It had been really helpful to see which units were specifically targeted for livestock predation. Do you know which ones they are?
It would have been good to have.
Yeah.
I could do that in the future. It might be easier if you have a unit that you're wondering about, and I could.
Well, your one slide showed an average of about 20 cats being killed by wildlife services, and a slight uptick was two or three a year for the past two or three years.
Yeah.
And so, if I knew Central Mountains had an uptick because of sheep, like I can get behind that pretty quickly versus, you know,
right. Most of them,
broad
so
swath.
The ones off the top of my head, and we've got some folks here that know the districts in this region. Maybe I'll let them speak to that for the central region. The East Canyon, Morgan, again, Morgan and Summit County were one of some of the highest incidences in the state. And then as you get down south, I think the Monroe, it might help if I actually look at the units. So
East Canyon's an example. You increase there by five.
Right. And that's Morgan County. That's one where in fact, well, I'm thinking of Morgan Southridge. But yeah, that is one where they've had increasing numbers. One point I didn't make that probably would help with the discussion is we've talked in the past about doing a pop with the RACs and in these meetings about how to do a population reconstruction to try to figure out what your trend is, and what we've seen over the last decade or so is a growing lion population based on that reconstruction. If you overlay that with the mule deer population trend, adjusting for the numbers, the trend is almost identical. Actually, lions start below deer, then they catch up and almost grow at the same rate. We've seen about the last 2 years, we've seen some declines in mule deer, and we're starting to see lions kind of do this classic predator-prey thing where they lag, but then they start to maybe level off. And so I think part of that is reflected in some of these recommendations for decreases, and we'll have to keep an eye on how that goes. But again, we're looking at three-year chunks at a time, so...
Really quick, Darren.
Yeah.
When you look at East Canyon, I mean, the female proportion of the harvest is half of what the target is.
Yeah.
And the age of, you know, five and older is double what it could be. So,
right.
So it's not that we're pushing the limits by any means on say a unit like that, for example.
Yeah.
Even and then when you throw in the livestock predation on top of that. Seems like a fairly...
The dynamic that's going on there is that East Canyon is mostly private,
yeah.
And so access is a limiting factor, and so it does a couple of things. Hopefully, there's a couple of things. One is that we'd like to see sportsmen take those lions instead of wildlife services if we can, and then it allows landowners to get a harvest objective permit later in the season. And if they've got a lion that's been hitting them, try to get it themselves because they have access, obviously. So
yeah, I was noticing the same thing on the East Canyon. I would liken that to if we had a, because this is maybe simpler to understand, a general deer unit that had a 15 to 17 buck to doe ratio, and our buck to doe ratio was actually 28. It's like there's lots of room to increase
right.
It. Feels like East Canyon falls into that kind of a
sure
scenario.
And really. There really are only a handful of units in the state that were actually that have a formal predator management plan. Most of these units fall within the management guidelines, and there's room to increase, and so that's why they've done that. But usually, if they're increasing in the 5 to 6 range, they're being generous, both because they can according to the plan, but also they've got some other concerns they're trying to address.
Any other questions? All right, turn it over to the public for questions. Any questions? Come on up. Go ahead. State your name, if you would, please.
Danny Robb, South. I just have a question as to why the lion management plan is based solely on pursuit and trapping is not part of that management. Trapping could play as big a part into
right.
that as pursuit could.
I think the main reason is a social reason that the public generally just will not support trapping mountain lions, and I think that's probably the easiest answer. Although in situations where lions are taking livestock, Wildlife Services is authorized to trap those individual lions, but.
So you're saying that the public is more willing to accept the fact that dogs run a lion for miles and miles until it gets tired of running and going up a tree?
And it may be
than it is to be trapped.
And I think it'd be difficult to add trapping to the ways that we hunt lions. We've already got quite a bit of opposition to the use of hounds, but that's something that we've done for a long, long time, and so that's a tradition that we're maintaining.
Well, I understand that. I guess I'm just kind of opposed to sticking to tradition.
I understand.
Because, you're not going to know what the public would say or their comments would be until you do it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions?
My name is Jason Binder. What was the average age of the lions killed last year?
I will show you. Let's see. Let's see. It'll be easier if I do this. It's not average age. Hold on. There we go. I'll bring that up big. It's kind of hard to see. So, it comes up. Can you even see that, Jason?
Yeah, I got it. You're looking at like 3.1.
So, it looks like just over 3. And that's since 96. So that's kind of been the trend. We saw some decreases in the 90s, and that correlates to that harvest, I think, that you saw back then. The trend since 08 has been maybe slightly increasing, but we're starting to see a lot of variance over the last 5 or 6 years where it's jumped around quite a bit. And that's why we use three-year averages. We take it in three-year chunks. The idea in the plan is that we're not constantly shifting year after year, but if the overall trend levels out, and you can kind of see, was it 13? We saw something similar to what we've seen since 16, and is that going to bounce back up? We don't know, but we definitely want to keep an eye on it.
Okay. My next question is, how many of the split or harvest objective units were over harvested last year?
There were a few, not less than 10, but I don't know the answer off the top of my head, Jason. Let me see if I can figure it out for you.
Okay, so my next question would be, so last year we over-harvested lions on some of these units that we're now raising tags on this year?
I don't know for sure. I didn't need to see what units they were, whether we increased or not. Yeah, sorry. I'll find out tonight for you for sure.
Okay, and one other question is, how come if the units are no longer on predator management, why are they still on split or harvest objective when they should go back to limited entry?
They can be split. What the plan says is it recommends that we don't use harvest objective if they're not under predator management. But a biologist still has the discretion to do that.
Okay. Now, another question is, I don't know how to word it. So when these units get to, say, down to one lion on Friday, the hunt stays open.
Right.
And so we end up harvesting 5 lions over.
Right.
How do we come up with a solution to not do that anymore?
Right. What I want to do is we want to go electronic with check-in. And so, that takes some development time. But what I'd like to see is something similar to what we did with coyotes this year. So if you harvest a lion, you get a GPS location with your phone. That starts the check-in process. It's real time. And so if you've taken a lion on a harvest objective or split unit during that harvest objective season, that updates our database immediately, so we know that lion's been taken. That's before you even come to an office. And so that eliminates the lag time between somebody harvesting an animal and showing up at our office. It also eliminates the problem on our end where somebody chucks their form in the back of their pickup truck and forgets about it. And so that's where I'd like to see us go.
Is that something we could implement this year, or could we, when it gets down to one on a Friday, could we put like a 24-hour
notice or something?
Notice that it's going to be shut down?
I think the way it is now is in rule, so we'd have to change rule to do that, but that's just administrative. So the reason why it is the way it is that sometimes guys or people will go out on a Friday and then they're out of phone service for the weekend, and they just can't check in, and so we wanted to try to allow for that. But on the other end of that, we still have the management parameters, so those lions are still counted when we look at percent females and ages in the harvest. So if we're over harvesting a unit, theoretically, the plan would start to decrease the number of tags. And then the biologist looks at that too. And if they feel like if they over harvested, they have the discretion then to make adjustments for that as well. So we'll kind of take all that into account.
Okay. Could we implement GPS on all lions taken? Because I know there's some lions that have been turned in,
right?
Been killed on a limited entry and then turned in on a harvest objective.
I'd like to go there, Jason. What I'd really like to do is make sure this Coyote app is going to work the way we think it is, and get all the bugs worked out of one, and then we can move a lot quicker into doing it with the others. But there's no reason. In fact, it's not required right now, but probably 70% of the lions that we check in have GPS coordinates where they were taken. But that's what's reported to us, and you know, we at least get a drainage. So yeah.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions?
My main concern that I'm Colton.
Would Belliston. You state your name, please?
Colton Belliston.
Thank you.
My one concern is I've hunted a lot of areas, Alaskan stuff, hunting sheep where they worry about GPS locations, and a lot of people just lie anyway. I'm all about trying to figure out a better way to do this, because like Jason said, that happens all the time. People, especially on these harvest objective units, people killing lions on other, you know, on a limited unit and then saying it was killed on a harvest objective unit. I don't know if there's a... Is there really a way to be able to make it so... I mean, people are honest or you're not honest. I don't know if that's going to solve anything. When it comes to that, any thoughts on if that would really be effective or if there's another effective way?
I think there are a couple... I agree that, you know, you can make it a little bit more of a hassle to cheat, but you're always still going to have people that are motivated to cheat. Using the phone thing, you're going to have to physically be where that picture is taken. And so, in the Coyote program, we had a few folks that were killing somewhere else, and then they'd come back home and they'd say, I got it here, I got it there.
Right.
So it makes it a little bit more of a hassle, but obviously you could drive wherever you wanted to and take a picture.
Right.
But it also gives our law enforcement folks a picture and to look at, you know, if they need to investigate. The other part of it is we want to protect that data. So I think the other concern that people might have is I don't want people to know where I hunt.
Exactly.
And I don't want a map out there that shows all the locations across. So we that's what we do with the Coyote stuff. You can request to have your information kept confidential, and we'd never publish anything that showed that data to the public in general.
Right.
So hopefully those two things would help. But again, you know, if people want to cheat and they're motivated enough, they certainly could.
Right. One other kind of question I had, you were talking about a trend kind of in females, especially this year, being taken. In my eyes, it's not that hard to be able to tell whether it's a tom or, you know, a lot of times you're sitting under a tree, you got all the time in the world to figure that out. Is there a way that we can, I don't know if it's ever been looked into, but looking into like a tom only type deal for like units, like, I don't try to get people to be more selective, because there's so many females that are getting killed that
yeah,
it's drastically hurting. A lot of the units that I hunt, some of these some of these raises on here, I'm just shaking my head. I can't believe it. But is there a way to maybe do something like that? I mean, like I said, sheep hunting, I mean, for heck's sake, we're counting rings to make sure they're 8 years old. Is it that hard to look under a tail? And
right. There's a couple things I think that go on. I think some people, if they're new to it, it can be tough. But we have that program they need to take online to try and tell the difference. So hopefully that helps a little bit. The data suggests that people are selective in general. You know, across the state, you saw what that percent females trend has been doing. People are getting, it almost looks like they're getting better at figuring out.
Hopefully.
And most guys don't want to take a female. You know, they want to get a big tom. And so you can tweak the hunting strategy to maybe give people a chance to not feel the pressure. But the plan would allow for, I'd hesitate to do a male only. Anytime we do point restrictions or anything like that, then we get guys, they shoot something, they're pretty sure what it is, they get it on the ground, oh crap.
Right.
And then they're, you know, shoot, shovel and shut up, or they have the, it ruins their experience for years to come. So I'd hesitate to go that far. As long as we can maintain our objectives where they need to be, I think we're okay.
Okay. That's all I had for right now. Jason covered the rest, so thank you.
Thanks. Any other questions?
Andy Lyon from Manti. Question for you, Sybil. Is the Southwest Manti under predator management? Or is it just a consideration?
I think they submitted a plan for it.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure they did. I'll double check and let you know.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you know, Rusty, if that has... I know the Southeastern region submitted quite a few, and I'm pretty sure the Manti was in there. But
I think they probably submitted it on their side. I didn't submit a formal plan on the Southwest side, but it was definitely a consideration.
Well, yeah, I can see on your paper it's a consideration, but my question is it predator management or not? It's a consideration.
I think it qualifies for it. It's just what tree you go off of when you're following the plan, and they both called for an increase. Okay. And so just in the interest of simplicity, we went off the easier tree to follow. But what it is it's 2 to 3 times the predation rate on mule deer. The Southwest, it's 2016-2017, it was the highest predation rate on deer for any unit for any year since we've been putting collars on deer. So it's super high. It's almost 3 times the state average. So.
Is that one of the units, maybe one of you guys can answer, is that one of the units with livestock problems?
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if it reflects. I don't think we had any depredation mortalities this past year, but historically it has been.
Well, yeah, I'm sure historically, but
right. Well, I mean, there's a lot of
3 years,
a lot of domestic sheep on that mound.
Well, I understand that. So we don't know for sure.
The past year there wasn't any reported. Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Any other questions? Well, one at a time, fellas.
Sorry.
Darren West. Darren, I just had a question. Could you elaborate a little bit more on what brings a unit into consideration for predator management for deer?
Yeah, there's several criteria in the plan, Darren. And let's see, maybe the best thing to do would be actually go through what those are. Sorry, technology is great when you're young and you can figure out what you're doing. So what they do, what the biologists do when they make recommendations is they look at their their deer population estimates, and there's certain things that have to occur in order to have a unit qualify. And if I can get this thing to work, I will tell you. Okay, so what we look at, the first question you ask is the population over 65% of objective. If it's below that, that's one box you would tick. The next, and that's just the previous year. The other thing we look at is over the last 3 years, and if the population is below 90% of objective, that'd be another thing that the biologists would look at. The other thing we look at is whether the deer population is below or at or below 85% survival for two of the last 3 years. And finally, if it's below 80% survival, adult survival, one of the last 3 years. So those, basically what we're trying to see is the herd struggling or not? And that's what qualifies it. And that's for deer. And bighorn sheep is a little bit different. It's similar. Is it below 90% of objective? Those herds tend to be relatively small. Most bighorn sheep units would qualify just based on that alone. But then the biologist gets to decide, okay, well, I meet the criteria, but where am I in terms of carrying capacity? And as Rusty mentioned, what's my cause-specific mortality? Does it look like, if they've got collars, does it look like lions are increasing predation? So all of those things go into the mix. So again, whether it qualifies and whether they actually actively or write a plan and actually are trying to reduce a cougar population would be the next step. And that's something that the biologist has to decide.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm Randall Cox, and I've hunted lions for over 40 years. Last year was the worst year I've ever seen it on the Central Mountain Manti. And I know how you can straighten this out. Put it all on limited entry. If you want to kill more lions, put more tags out for that limited entry unit. Mm-hmm. And you won't be killing out these other units. Simple. I go up there, I hunted probably two times a week this winter, and I ended up catching three lions. That's unbelievable. And the reason is, too, is we have no deer. Right. Deer are gone.
Right. Yeah.
The highways are overkilling. You could shut the deer hunt down for 10 years and still not have any deer.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah, it's tough.
That's all I got.
I'd recommend, too, that do you know who your local biologist is?
I don't.
I'm sure he's here tonight. Get with him and sit down and talk about some of this stuff.
A new guy.
Okay, yeah. I'd recommend that you guys talk about those local units at a local level and have those conversations. And
yeah, because I hate to see the deer leave. I hate to see the lions leave.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thanks. Sounds like you got a lot of experience.
There's a solution to this stuff.
Yeah, great. Thanks.
All right, any other questions before we move to comments?
I said one more thing.
Come on up so we can got you on the...
Colton Bellston again. As I'm talking about deer, seems like kind of the lion population, you're taking the aspect of whatever the deer are doing, and that's kind of what the lions are doing, right? Am I understanding that correctly? So if the population of the deer is doing really good, then... You know, you move one direction with the lion. If the deer's doing bad, you know, then you put more lion tags out.
Right. No, go ahead.
There's been a heavy trend you know, with deer tags, more and more deer tags offered every single year. Like, it's a nightmare hunting deer in this state anymore. The deer going down, the quality deer going down, it kind of really feels like the lion are taking a lot of the heat for that. Why don't we lower deer tags if we want more deer? Why don't we lower deer tag and leave the lion alone?
Right. I mean, obviously, there are a lot of moving parts.
Right.
Right. And I have enough to worry about. I'll let someone else worry about deer. But yeah, I, you know, in general, I think statewide, again, you know, it looks to me like the lion population follows deer numbers, and that, you know, makes perfect sense, I think.
Right.
But again, these decisions about units are made, you know, by those local biologists, and so, you know, it's really important that you get with your local guys and gals.
How exactly do they get their numbers? Just for my own, I'm just kind of
the stuff we're looking at tonight.
Yeah, how exactly do they come up with those numbers? Because it would be a heck of a job to get accurate numbers. I get that.
Right, yeah.
It seems pretty easy for tags to be raised, but there's so much question of how many lions are really there.
Right, yeah.
So it's concerning.
That's definitely something, and again, this study I mentioned is something that we want to try to get a better estimate. I think we have a pretty good feel for trend. And just in the interest of time, I might dive into the weeds on it, but I'd be happy to talk to you about the population, you know, how we try to figure out what's going on there.
Okay.
But... you know, they did a 10-year study in Utah on the Monroe and the Okers, and then they went back and looked. So they had pretty good estimates for lion numbers on those units. They had collars on, and when you've got that kind of data, you can figure out about how many there are. And what they did is they took these management parameters and laid that on top of known population trends. And the Okers is sort of a lightly hunted unit. And the Monroe was a more heavily hunted unit, and they said that, you know, these two parameters are fairly predictive, that as long as you're below 40% on females and you've got that older age class, you should be able to sustain or grow a lion population. But that, you know, obviously things get more complicated,
right?
You know, the real world is messy. But I think the plan's a good one. I think we're on the right track for sure.
Okay, that's it. Thanks.
Thanks. Any more questions? Just a reminder, this is the question portion.
I got one follow-up question.
Okay.
How many limited entry units, based on your recommendations for this year, are left?
Let me look for sure.
Two limited entry.
Yeah, not split. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll tell you exactly. Three.
Okay. Three left in the state.
Yeah, Chalk Creek Camas, Current Creek North, and West Strawberry.
Any other questions?
I'd just like to pose, Al Robb, I'd just like to pose a question to Darren. Traditionally, the division has stated a cougar population statewide of 3,000 to 3,500.
Right.
What's that estimate now?
Again, it's complicated. If you do a population reconstruction, and that's just based solely on animals that are checked into us, so that's, it's going to be low. It's an absolute minimum. We think we probably have somewhere in the neighborhood about 3,000 that are 2,000 that are 2 years old or older. And that's just, again, a minimum, at least that.
Okay.
Then you need to add in kittens and yearlings to that. And again, you know, the more of these sort of leaps of faith you make, the less confidence you can have. But that, you know, that probably easily would double the number. So say 4,000.
Okay.
But that doesn't take into account natural mortality, and any kind of natural mortality that would increase the number. So that's why I'm hesitant to get into numbers, but regardless of what natural mortality is, that trend remains the same. It just shifts up and down on a scale.
Yeah.
And the trend has been increasing for the last, since 2008 or so, and we might be starting to see it level off.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions?
Just real quick, there is a predator management plan for the Manti.
My name's Garrett Smith. You kind of already touched on this, but do you have an age classification for males and females, or just an overall average?
We have that, but that's not what the management parameter is. It just takes into account all. And you want both. You want both older age class, females and males. But because we harvest less than 50 or 40% females, that is skewed more to the male side. So it's based on what's harvested. And if you harvest more males, that average age is weighted a little bit more towards males.
Okay. That was it.
Okay, any other questions?
Greg Christiansen. I'm just wondering who is a central biologist. I called Salt Lake office last year. I called Price office. Left messages to have them call me back. Nobody ever called.
For which unit?
You have a
unit?
Southwest Manti.
So Rusty Robinson is in the back there. He was up here a little bit earlier. He's a new biologist on the Manti, on the southwest portion, so everything from the Skyline Drive down through the valley there to the Nebo unit.
Yeah.
So if anybody has questions on that unit, call the Springville office and we can get you in touch with the right biologist.
Okay.
And he doesn't answer my calls either.
All right, any other questions? Okay, great. Let's move on to the comment portion. We'll start with, and thanks, Darren. We'll start with Jason Walker. Thank you, sir.
Ah, oh, man, I was hoping I was going to be last. first of all, I'd like to thank the division and its biologists for allowing us a pursuit season on these lions. It's nice to be able to buy a pursuit permit and load up your dogs and just go train hounds rather than having to have a kill permit. I really value that. There's a lot of freedom in that, and I appreciate that. I think sometimes the public, I'm not trying to cause any hard feelings or anything to anybody, but the lion's a good runner for a short distance, but they're short distance runners, and there's a lot more trailing involved in actually catching lions. So he might trail a lion for miles, but once he's jumped, he's not usually going to go far. And I've seen a lot of older lions just fall asleep right in the tree, so they don't seem to be too stressed. Especially the older ones, I've noticed that. But I'd always like to see more lions. I'm a houndsman. I like lions. So I'd always like to see less tags. But one thing that concerns me the most is every time we substantially increase the overall permit numbers in the state, we seem to get a little more attention from the anti-hunting groups. That makes me a little nervous because I'd like my boy who's sitting just next to me down there, I'd like to him to be able to carry on with this sport one day if he'd like to. So I'd like to very much see it stick around. And so I do get a little nervous about these anti-hunting groups and attention that we seem to bring on ourselves when we increase these permit numbers. That's about it. Thank you.
Right, thank you. And I did forget to mention as part of the procedure, not that you had a problem there, Jason, but if you're representing yourself, please try and keep your comments to 3 minutes. And if you're representing an organization, please try and keep your comments to 5 minutes. All right. Next up, we've got John Baum.
I'm a stockman from Fayette, which is Sanpete County. I'd like to thank you for increasing the cougar permits. in most of our area, but I think you ought to think about the Fillmore Pavant increasing that at least another 10 permits. Them lions are coming down across the highway into the Scipio coming west. I mean, they're coming into Mayfield. Wildlife Services caught one in Mayfield 30 days ago. And 2 weeks ago, they caught one in Sigurd Town right in the middle of town. Both towns have had lion kills, killed sheep, goats right in town. So I think the pressures, they're coming to town, and I think you need to give more permits out.
All right, thank you.
All right, next up, Jeremy Anderson. Oh, okay. Well, we can. All right.
Jeremy Anderson, representing Mule Deer Foundation. We support the division's plan as presented. Would love to see some sort of amendment, but also understand Darren's concern with making sure the GPS thing with the coyote deal works. It is something maybe to monitor for a year, but would love to see that in the future. And just like to thank the division for all the work.
Thank you. All right, Matt Farnsworth.
Hello, Matt Farnsworth, Utah Houndsman Association. I'd like to read a letter real quick, and then if I could, speak for myself as well. Start with a letter from the Houndsman Association. The Utah Houndsman Association Board has reviewed and discussed the DWR's 2018 Cougar recommendations for the upcoming year. The Utah Houndsman Association cannot support such a drastic increase in tags, as this is not sound management. The Utah Houndsman Association recognizes that the proposals are within the parameters of the management plan. However, an increase of zero permits is also fits within those parameters. The DWR has increased cougar permits drastically over the past 2 to 3 years. The Utah Houndsman Association does not feel that the cougar population is increasing and believes that in very few areas it is stable or stabilizing. An increase in tag allocations across the state is not warranted, nor is it the best management practice for cougars or other wildlife species. Please review the cougar management plan if possible, and if possible, review the increase given across the board on cougars the past few years. The RAC members would not vote nor endorse such increase on any other species that we manage in Utah. Utah Houndsman Association looks forward to discussing in more detail with the DWR the predator management designations, cougar management, and the cougar management plan this next year when the management plan is opened back up for review. At this time, the Utah Houndsman Association asks that at a minimum, the following changes be adopted. Number one, on the Book Cliffs East Cougar Unit, move that unit from harvest objective to a split unit. The reason for that is last year, 80% of the cougars killed on that unit, 26 out of the 29, were killed by non-resident hunters. If that rate applied to any other species, that would be very bad. Although warned this would occur years ago, DWR has created a non-resident hunting unit within the state of Utah. Again, over 80% of the lions killed last year. On the Monroe Cougar Unit, we recommend a zero increase in the tags. The DWR is proposing an increase of 6 tags. That's 60%. Okay? A 60% increase in one swoop. On the Central Mountain Southwest, we've heard a lot about that unit today. I appreciate everybody showing up to show their support for this change. We recommend they have a zero increase of tags. The DWR is proposing an increase of 6 tags. Again, 35%. 6 doesn't sound like a whole lot, but 35% puts a different twist on it. If you go back historically on the Southwest Manti Unit, since 2014, there's been a 200% increase in lion tags on that unit. I understand we've heard today that there's a management plan, wildlife management plan going into place there. That I'm sure has something to do with it. But again, keep in mind, since 2014, there's been a 200% increase on tags in that unit. It's also moved from a limited entry to a split unit. And lastly, we request that GPS coordinates for kill sites of all cougars harvested in the state of Utah. We brought this up last night at the RAC. I know a lot of people stole my thunder today. That'll just give us an extra tool to help law enforcement out. The UHA board urges RAC members and wildlife board members to consider these proposed changes to the cougar recommendations. That's from the Houndsman Association. Now, if I could take that hat off and speak for a second, coming from myself. A couple units I had some concerns about. And to speak to Mr. Garcia's point about the huge increase of tax, when you look at 6, 2, 3, 4, it doesn't really add up. But when you look at it as a 200% increase on some units, a 60% increase on other units, that's very alarming to me, as someone that hunts those units. I'll echo a lot of the sentiments that are brought up in the question phase. Again, this last year, I understand that the snow levels weren't all that great, and my dogs aren't all that great either, but I had a hard time producing lions. Back to some of the particular units on the Vernon, there's an increase of 3 tags recommended, or excuse me, a total tag number of 12 on the Vernon unit. Okay, historically, over the last 3 years, the yearly harvest is only 3 lions, and that's with it going in a split unit, harvest objective, and I would argue, I'll probably get beat up in the parking lot for this when we're done, but 2 of the best packs of dogs live within a day's driving distance of that unit and can hunt it freely on the harvest objective. They're not killing lions because lions aren't there. The Oker Stansberry, 14 tags recommended. The average harvest over the last 3 years is 7. Okay? So we're giving twice as many tags as that unit has historically produced. That just seems a little bit out of line. The other thing that just me personally I would recommend is units, harvest, especially harvest objective, that are over harvested 1 year. So we have, I believe it was 10 units that had an over-harvest of lions this year. Those numbers be subtracted from the quota the following year. That makes sense. We killed 5 too many this year, so let's take 5 off that the next year. I'd like to thank the presenter today. There's a lot of jobs I'd like to have. His is not one of them. Thank you guys for the rack. Just, I want to leave you with this. I've had hounds for a long time. I've had many days of I should sell these things and buy a boat and go fishing. The only thing that keeps me from doing that 90% of the time is watching the joy on my 10-year-old boy's face as he turns his dog into a pack with a bear, or he driving down the road at 2:00 in the morning sees a track that, oh hey, we can sit on that track till daylight, we can turn my dog out that my 10-year-old boy's trained himself. I echo Jason's statements. I'm really worried about that stuff going away. So thank you guys for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Andy Lyon.
Won't be stating my name again.
You're good, Andy.
I would ask the RAC to consider the following. I believe the DWR recommended 8 tags for the Southwest Manti last year. This was changed during the RAC and Big Game Board process to 12 tags last year. Now the DWR recommended 18 tags. I would ask the RAC to consider 8 tags this year on the Southwest Manti as the unit has been hit hard and can't take any more. I would ask you to consider the process of turning in lions that are harvested. I would ask that you require GPS coordinates for the lion kills to ensure they harvest on the proper unit. I would ask that the harvest numbers for the units show up on the website in a more timely fashion. With today's technology, I don't see why the harvest numbers on the units can't change immediately. It is my understanding, after last year, the numbers get changed at noon each day. This allows a unit basically to be open for an extra day if harvest objective has been met on that unit. I understand this unit has a predator management consideration for deer. And if this is the case, why have we been told deer are doing good and tags for the deer in the last few years has been changed and went up? In closing, I believe the DWR proposed tag numbers are way too high and need to be carefully considered by you, the RAC. Thank you.
Thank you, Randy. Randall, is it Jay Koa? Cobb? Oh, okay. Thanks, Randall. All right, McCray Christiansen.
I would just like to go with what Andy said here a minute ago. I think the number on the Southwest Manti is way too high. We've increased it over 200% the last 2 years and changed it from a limited entry to a split. I would like to see it back into a limited entry where we can manage the numbers on an even basis, not a overkill 1 year and then shut it down the next, which we've done over the last 5 years on that unit. So, thank you.
All right, thank you. Darren West.
Darren West, representing myself. Speaking on behalf of a sportsman, I've seen the decline over the last several years of our mule deer herds. It's extremely concerning, and we've heard several people get up and talk today about the opportunity for their youth or their kids to be able to hunt. If we continue to see this trend of downward decline in our mule deer herds, it really concerns me about the opportunity for youth to hunt mule deer in the future. And I think that the way that the division has recommended more permits to use as a managing tool to increase deer herds, I would fully support the division's recommendations as presented. Thank you.
Thank you. Jesse Painter.
He's not here. He's helping me to train his dog.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yes. His comments were simply no increase. Jason Bender.
My name is Jason Binder. This is a tough situation we're in. You know, several of these units that were brought up on the board with substantial increases, a lot of them were over-harvested last year. But yet this year, we're looking at increases. A few years ago, we had to have an emergency shutdown on the Manti because over-harvest of females, and now we're looking back at going to harvest objective or splits. We need to get away from these harvest objective and splits. All they are is legalized poaching. It comes down to the end, and guys run to those units, and they get over-harvested every year, and that's all it is. It's legalized poaching. We're giving them a tag. They're allowed to go kill them, even though the number of permits is expired. We need to have GPS coordinates. We really need to start implementing ways to see where these lions are coming from, because they're being killed on one unit, turned in on another. And I know several people and lions. I didn't turn them in myself, but I've had guys call me and say, we turned them in the DNR, they shot a female with kittens, and they won't do nothing. You know, that to me, that's pretty heartening. You know, it's starting to happen with the bears, too, on the harvest objective. They're getting wiped out. You know, we really need to start looking at our management practices with these predator animals, because I understand what everybody's point is with the deer population. I drive from Wallsburg to Park City every day, and I can count 5-10 deer run over on the highway. Those deer weren't killed by lions, because not very many people own a cougar anymore that they drive around back and forth to work. I would like to see the DNR go with no increases this year, go with the numbers they had last year, and go back with the units that back to what they were last year instead of changing them around. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason. Alan Olson.
Alan Olson, livestock producer, Central Utah. Utah wool growers, I'm representing them tonight. We fully support the plan that the DWR has presented here tonight. I guess what I'm asking people to look at is, we had so many with livestock under the with lion and bear. If they do depredation on our animals, we are supposed to get reimbursement for it. There was so many kills that we did not receive 100% of our reimbursement. There was so many that they ran out of funding, and so we only received a portion of that. And so I appreciate that the houndsmen aren't finding them, but they need to hunt a little closer to a herd of sheep, because the lions are finding us.
Thank you.
Robert Olson.
Robert Olson?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Robert Olson.
Alan, unlock your gate, buddy, and I'll come up there.
If you come with any step in the meeting.
The Southwest Manti has been getting hammered. Like Jason says, they had an emergency closure on that
4 years ago.
And now we're going backwards. And 18, that's ridiculous. I recommend we go back to 8. Put it back to a limited entry. This unit, what does it take? 12 points to draw on that unit? It's a sought-after unit. And it took 2 weeks after March when the split started before that quota got met. That was good snow. We got some good snow right there at the 1st of March. People out hunting their butts off. And it took 2 weeks to fill, I don't know, two or three casts on that big unit with a ton of public access. The cats ain't there. That's why it took 2 weeks in good snow for half the outfitters in Utah down there hunting the most sought-after unit in the state. And we're putting an increase like this on it? I disagree with it. Thank you.
Thank you. Bryce Pilling.
Bryce Pilling, Sportsman Fish and Wildlife. Thank you. We support the division's recommendations on this with two exceptions, and we'd like to support the houndsman on the Book Cliff unit that they're wanting to change, and also the GPS locations. We think that's critical, and we'd also like to see that mandatory for wildlife services. The increase is really necessary. We feel like the way our deer herds are and what they suffered two years ago in 2016. So thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Bryce. Okay, I'll turn it, that's all the comment cards we have. Is there any other comments? Did we miss anybody? Okay, great. All right, turn it back over to the rack for discussion. Who'd like to kick it off?
So I heard on the Southwest Manti, we increased it by six permits, but we don't have a livestock problem. Did I hear that right this year? Historically, we have, right? I can't see anybody. Sorry.
I think Rusty's probably the best to answer that, but yeah, that's what I got out of the conversation. But I think maybe the one thing that we missed is there's a deer concern there. We've seen in, was it 18%, Rusty? We've seen lion specific mortality on those collared deer increasing the last 3 years, and last year was 18%. So that's 18% of the deer herd being taken by lions. That's probably the main driver.
Is the deer
behind that? Yeah.
Okay.
Do you know how many were stuck on the highway?
I don't. No. I, off the top of my head, Rusty, you might know what. But what we have cause specific, how many collared deer were killed on the highway? Yeah, yeah.
They haul 84,000 tons of deer and elk out to the landfill out there. Mayfield.
Okay, any other? Ben, go ahead.
I've got a question for Bryce Pilling. Bryce, can you come up for a second? On your way up, if I recall correctly, you guys, SFW, was asking for, if I recall correctly, on the big game meeting a couple months ago, the Manti was designated for an increase and you guys were asking for a decrease or something like that. Do I remember that correctly?
I don't. No.
You don't know? Okay. Okay.
You do remember that correctly.
Okay. I guess so. All right. Thanks, Bryce. The reason I bring that up is, I mean, we've heard a lot about the Southwest Manti tonight, and I appreciate those concerns. But we've also heard on the other side that that there's heavy deer concerns there, and as I recall, those deer have been struggling down in that area for quite some time. As I look at the numbers here, that unit falls into every objective without issue, and from my perspective, just the straight numbers, I don't see any reason that this unit couldn't support the additional tags that are being asked for. I've heard some comments that if this were any other species, that there's no way we'd let this happen, and I disagree with that. With deer, I think we do the opposite. When there's room for more opportunity, we try to give that additional opportunity. So that's kind of where I'm at on the Southwest Manti is considering the historical livestock issues, considering the current and ongoing deer issues, and that all the numbers line up for an increase. Despite the outspeak here against it, I would support it.
Ken. Ben, I think what you're referring to is on the South Manti San Rafael, our RAC dropped the permits 150, and the other four RACs dropped at 200 for deer. And I think the Wildlife Board dropped at 200 for deer.
Okay, thank you for that. So, again, just to reiterate the deer issues there, right? And one other comment I would make is as we make our recommendations tonight, that when we make recommendations on a predator species, cougars, tonight, we're impacting more than just cougars. We're impacting our ungulate populations as well, and I think we have a responsibility to take that into consideration. So.
Mike.
Darren, could you speak about the Buckcliff's limited entry idea? The divisions?
Yeah, I think so the issue is, as the houndsman mentioned, when you look at the lines that are taken on the Buckcliff's units predominantly. It's a voice from above. All right, I'll talk faster. When we switched to harvest objective on the Buckcliffs, we saw kind of a flip-flop between the percentage of non-residents taking lions and residents, and that gap has been widening over time. But really, the region's objective is a deer issue. They've seen increasing adult survival. They want to make sure those lions are taken. So really, you know, the social aspect of, you know, how does the RAC feel about non-residents predominantly being the people harvesting out there? That, I think, is a social question. This is a perfect venue to have that discussion.
Am I wrong to think that we could accomplish killing those lions, but by going to a split where we do limited entry and the residents get their tags and they can go out there and hunt and have that opportunity to hunt, and if they don't fill those tags, then the split kicks in and it goes to harvest objective.
Right.
That's the purpose of that, right? So that would protect the residents, but then also protect the deer herd, because, you know, those guys are obviously going to come in and kill cats.
Yeah.
Am I reading that right, Matt?
Yeah, I don't. And we'll have to wait and see. If we changed it, we'd obviously want to look, and they may make permit adjustments depending on how that all pans out. Sometimes, you know, the limited entry portion is sort of prime time to hunt, and if that goes underfilled, you know, by the time harvest objective kicks in, they may hit quota. They may not. Most of our split units hit the quota. So, you know, that's probably the track record, I would suspect. Yeah.
So, Darren, while you're there, you and I discussed this the other day, and you had mentioned that 80% number was from this past year of the non-residents. Did you have a chance to go?
I do, yeah. I can show you. I looked back several years on that.
Thank you.
Let's see if that's... Yes, this is it. So... sorry, this is behind all of you. And okay, oh, geez, that's awful. Okay, I might have to go up there and point. So the red line is non-resident. And these are the numbers of cougars taken by the two groups. So the red line is non-residents. The blue line, which...
Can you see that? Maybe mm-hmm. It's old. But I'm not tall enough. it, right here, it diverges. And then you can see... So that's what residents have been doing compared to non. I didn't try to get any of that.
I've got one right here.
So I'll repeat that for the record. You can see a divergence in 2013. So prior to 2013, that was a split unit, if I remember correctly. When they switched to harvest objective again to try to make sure that they were taking the cougars they needed to take. Oh, awesome. Yeah, I'll probably shoot myself in the eye. But... all right, do I dare? Oh, there we go. So there's where that line goes if it's hard to see in the back.
When did you say that went from limited entry to harvest objective right there?
Yeah.
Right there, okay.
So that's what's been going on. Biologically, you know, the region's concerned that they're addressing the deer issue out there. And then socially, yeah, it's, you know, does this... concern you?
What, was it just divergence. Limited entry, or was it split?
It was split.
So it was split.
Yeah. Okay. So this is what was happening during the split. The other thing that I noticed, Ben, is success rates were lower here. So they actually had higher quotas during this time period, but they weren't filling them. This first year, in 2014, the quota was 20. Well, because it's two lines, maybe it's a little bit muddier, but actually it was like 25, something like that. Once it kicked into harvest objective, they were below the first year, and then I think out of the last four, they were under in 2016, but the other 3 years they hit the quota. So that's something that I think the region... and something that I would be concerned about. We'd want to keep an eye on what success rates did. If we wanted to keep it split, that may mean we'd increase permits to meet that objective.
Thanks, Darren.
Well, you're doing a different season on the Pont Sagant. Probably wouldn't be prudent to do a different season on the Book Cliffs.
I'd prefer not to. The Book Cliffs is it draws plenty of attention. I don't think we need to run it. In fact, I think it closed before it really made much sense to extend it.
Thanks, Darren. I had a few thoughts real quick, Ben. The reason we're here is to take public input and to listen to what the public has to say. I think within this particular proposal, we have some leeway to listen to some of the comments and concerns that we've got, but still address some of the biological needs on some of these units. As a chair, I'm unable to make a motion, but I would like to see if we couldn't find a way to use a little creativity and find a way to kind of meet in the middle on this, I think, in my opinion, that would be the right thing to do here on this particular issue. Pick a unit or two or some units that are concerned, maybe meet in the middle, something like that. Just my two cents.
Maybe I'll follow up because I have a very similar thought. 100% of the emails I received in the last 2 weeks said, don't increase any permits. That was from both non-consumptive and anti-hunting groups, but it was also from houndsman groups. And when I see both sides being opposed to something, I think we risk ostracizing our public if you accept these wholesale. And so I think that would be a worst-case scenario outcome for me tonight. I've taken a number of comments, both in email and tonight. I have some specific recommendations I can make a motion for. But I think it is important to keep in mind, with all of the very passionate interests that showed up tonight, we have to recognize them, or else what we're doing here seems suspect.
Go ahead, Ben.
I would just like to also point out that we have had sportsmen's groups, multiple, and livestock organizations that do support the plan and the increases. So there's both support and non-support on both sides. And the emails that I've received, there's the houndsman letter that was read to us tonight, and I'm definitely sensitive to that group. The rest of the emails have all been from that environmentalist anti-hunting group. In my opinion, they are trying to. I don't buy any of their comments. I think they didn't support. They all have the same comments, and none of them are supported by any data. So, Mr. Chairman, I would propose that I've got a list here of things that have come up tonight.
Ben, if it's okay, George had his hand up. Would you mind if I come back to you on any amendments? Let him.
If I could finish my comment real quick and then go to George, I won't make a motion at this time. What I was going to recommend is, and I didn't see you, George, so I apologize. I would like to go through the four recommendations, or at least a few of the recommendations from the Houndsman Association individually.
Okay.
Address those individually, and then go from there.
Okay, great. Come back to you, Ben.
George. You know, I kind of feel the same way. I think we've gotten a lot of input on the Southwest Manti. I think we need to listen to that and make a motion in regards to that unit. In regards to the Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife and the sportsmen's groups, they always get up and support DWR. They never come to the table with anything different, ever. Yeah, that is true. I've sat here, Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife, every single time. They have the same comment and the same response every single time. Nothing different. I'm a big Mule Deer Foundation supporter. I support the Mule Deer Foundation. But I agree with this gentleman right here. I am not buying West Desert Tintic Vernon increases and the Ochre Stansberry increases at all. So I'd be willing to make a motion to not increase those units.
Go ahead, Dan.
All right. It may take a minute. I haven't said anything yet tonight, right? Other than a question. I really do respect the need for the division to try to, you know, sell permits and try to fill those gaps. I think that cougar and deer and all their other prey were here long before human management of the, and cougar, I think many people would agree, are entirely capable of self-regulating their own population. Basically, it's older toms killing kittens that might not be their own, and there are studies that back that, Ben. Plenty of studies that back that. And the data, Darren, definitely demonstrates that over the last 4 years, the higher harvest has actually resulted in higher depredation rates. Well, this is not a coincidence. This is not magic. You know, I mean, in my mind, I take that, and that's a trend. I take that as, well, you know, the more bigger we harvest, the more problems we have with, you know, livestock and humans and all of that. So that's my comment there. I don't think that naturalists feel like they've been duly represented either in the in the process for the management plan over the years, fairly uneven. And I don't think they feel like all of the science has been included in that, especially the behavioral science. When I did my master's thesis, I could account for 90% of the variability in looking at the numbers, but the other 10% was purely behavior. And behavior can be huge. And so I just throw that out like a dead fish on the table. And then also, I'm not an anti-hunter. Last year I killed my 101st deer and elk. That's a lot of dang gut piles, you know. Sorry, some of them might be whitetail, but whitetail deer. But my point is that I'm representing a non-consumptive users that feel underrepresented, as I think George was indicating. And I agree entirely with the Houndsman with their suggestions. I think that older trophy toms, you know, when you kill those trophy animals, you really disrupt their social structure. And so what I would recommend, and I think what some people, I'm a consumptive user, I eat things. What I would recommend is that houndsmen eat more younger toms. They taste better. I hear cougar is great to eat. No, it's true. And so that would be my recommendation, is that we do harvest those more cougar, but we focus on those younger toms and we eat those and you know, females, whatever. And then in terms of East Canyon, you know, I've hunted East Canyon area for my entire life, and it goes through a decade of boom and then a bad winter, bust, up and down and up and down. All we have to have is a big snowfall, and then all of the deer end up dead in the bottom of ravines because they can't even get out of the deep snow. Well, sorry. I mean, that cougar could solve that problem if there was a balance in the cougar population that could handle that. Because we can't get on those private properties up East Canyon. It's very difficult. I have to hunt on public land, and it's a real pain. And I know that people want to respond to all of my comments, but you know, I've kind of held back here a little bit to listen to other people. So anyway, that's all I got. I recommend that we follow the Houndsman's recommendations and basically leave it as it is. We don't have enough information. It's too fuzzy. I think that the information is too fuzzy to be making these herky-jerky reactions year to year to year. Anyway, I'm done. Thanks.
Thanks, Dan. So in interest of...
I've got something to say since everyone's given their two cents.
Go ahead, Mike.
I think discussion's great because I think it lets people know where people stand, where everybody stands. I don't think the data that the division uses is herky-jerky. I think the data the division uses is pretty solid. They pull a tooth out of the cat and they cut it. And they get within a year, usually. It's a little harder on predators than it is on ungulates. I served on the Cougar Committee. It was represented very well by non-consumptive sportsmen's groups, non-sportsmen's group sportsmen, houndsmen, agriculture. The data that we use to manage these predators is, it can't be just thrown out the window. We have paid biologists that put together these recommendations. They don't want to see the cats all killed.
The time is now 9:00 and the library is closed. Please bring items up front to check out. We appreciate you coming in. Have a good evening.
And I also don't want to go, I mean, when we talk about the Vernon, that's been brought up a couple times. Well, you said that there was only three cats killed last year?
That's the 3-year average.
The 3-year average. Last year there was 9 cats killed on the Vernon. 11% of those were females. The target is 40%, up to 40%. But only 11% were females. 5 years old and older, 33% of the cats killed on the Vernon were 5 years older or older.
and the target is 15% to 20%. So it's hard to say, well, let's just throw out my own personal feelings and not look at the actual data that we have on paper given to us by the DWR. And if that data is false, then how can we ever know? It's not. It's they're numbers of cats that were physically turned in. So it's hard to say, well, you know, I want to throw out all these numbers and make them my numbers. No, the number's right there. It's not three. There was 9 killed last year.
Yeah, Mike, I think...
I know that it's a trend over time, but...
I just want to clarify. I think there's a misunderstanding on those numbers, because I had it too, and I was going to ask Darren earlier, but Darren, maybe you could clarify. The table that you're looking at, I've been looking at it too. At the top says summary of harvest data from last 3 years.
For the last 3 years.
So these numbers, Darren, are these last year's numbers, or are they
those are the three-year totals. So, and the reason we do that, Mike, okay, and you know this from the committee, is to avoid that herky-jerky reaction year after year. But that's based on 9 individuals that were turned into us, and
So to clarify, on Vernon, sense. There was 9 cats killed over the last three years.
Yeah.
Mike, I had the same misunderstanding earlier, so I just wanted to...
Perfect.
Sorry, maybe I should have made that more clear.
Thank you.
So really quick, I mean, I think most of the increases fall in line. I really like the increases in northern Utah. I kind of raked you over the coals last year because you didn't have any increases at all. And I really like the idea of somehow protecting the residents in the harvest of the cougars on the book cliffs. I think that there should be something done there. And I think that we should address the Southwest Manti numbers a little bit, just from the public reaction. And as it goes through the process, then it can get fleshed out a little bit more by many other RAC members. So.
Thanks, Mike. Ken?
On the Southwest Manti, I can see where it's coming from, but I can also see the deer situation, and I can see where tags were reduced on the deer last year because the deer are down, and it is an area where the lions are being feeding on the deer, so I think where it's at is perfect.
Okay, thanks. Ben, I'll...
Before we go to a motion, the point about the data... Clearly, the vision's gotten better about crunching numbers. We learn more every day. When we get this GPS program and the electronics going, I think it's going to even tell us that much more. But we have that data because houndsmen are out there chasing these things all winter long. So accepting their recommendations is probably a pretty good move. Addressing the Southwest Manti, you know, do we need, 10 total? Can we cut that in half? I mean, we can go through and cherry pick. But I think the biggest problem that needs to be addressed is in the plan management review. And a comment was made during the bear rack, and I sat right here, it was in the other building, and he said, you know, you're giving us the number of harvest data for the last 3 years, you're giving us the 3-year average for age, but you're making changes every year. And if you want to get a more accurate number, why don't we get more data points? And I know the current management plan says we tweak it every year, but why don't we make a move to not tweak this every year, not rehash this conversation every year, and let the data speak for itself, and then we can get more accurate, in my opinion, more accurate because we have more numbers. So I would make specific recommendations also during a motion, but my number one recommendation that I'd like to see this RAC move towards is to figure out a longer period of time in which to have this conversation again.
Okay, good discussion. I think to move it along, let's get some motions out on the table. Christine?
I just want to ask, Darren, you said that you base this on the Western Management Plan and there's new science that you're going to put in this new thing. How does that affect all this?
There's a couple things. One is that's something that I'm always looking at, and there's a couple of things that have come out. Like one thing, actually, Dan, you kind of mentioned, and I think the only thing I'd say is be careful about correlation versus causation. You know, you see a trend in one number and another. Certainly, they're correlated. I agree with you 100%. But we have to figure out what the cause of that is. Is it a growing lion population, which another data point seems to indicate? So that's one study that, that recently came out. Peebles did a paper, I think in Wyoming. I always get it mixed up. But basically the same thing. They saw, as lion harvest increased, they saw an increase in incidences. So something similar to what we've seen here. The other big recent one is the Uncompahgre Plateau study that Ken Logan did in Colorado. And he suggested there that you ought to, if you harvest more than 10 to 15% of your independent animals of a population, you should expect to see a decrease in that trend. And so those are a couple of things that we're looking at in the update. In terms of Utah, I have no, Ken Logan had a lot of callers out. I don't have any reason to doubt his numbers. But if that's the case and we're still growing, that suggests to me that we're not harvesting 10 to 15% of the total independent lions in the state. That's kind of the conclusion I'd come to. There's a lot of other things. There's new social stuff. But all of that'll, what I would prefer to do is kind of let that review happen. This plan is up for review every 5 years, so it'd be up for review beginning in 2019 for a 2020 recommendation cycle. But obviously the board can instruct the division to do it sooner. There's a lot going on. The technology is really advancing quickly. Camera trapping, there's lots of stuff out there. So all of those things I think we'd want to try to implement if we could, yeah, as they come online.
Thanks, Darren. Okay, so we're running up against time. We've got another agenda item. We've got to be out of here by 10. So I think the discussion's good. Why don't we do it within the framework of getting some motions out and then discuss the merits of each motion. So, Ben, would you like to start that off?
Yeah, I'll kick it off. First thing I want to address is the Houndsman recommendation on the Book Cliffs East unit to move that to a split unit as opposed to a harvest objective to address that non-resident take concern. So I would move that we support the Houndsman Association on that item.
Okay, so we got a motion.
I'd second that.
Okay. Does that motion make sense?
No.
Okay.
I can restate. I move that we change the Book Cliffs East unit to a split unit as opposed to a harvest objective unit.
Okay. Okay. Seconded by Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, any discussion on that before we take a vote? No? Okay, all in favor? That's unanimous. Thank you. We have another motion.
Yeah. I'll tackle one more. Again, from the Houndsman letter and recommendation concerning the GPS coordinates for kill sites. Hearing Darren's comments on it, DWR is supportive of this idea and wants to go this direction. I don't know that it's ready to be implemented at this time, is my feel. So in the form of a motion, I would move that we recommend that the division bring this back as an action item next year.
Okay.
I'll second that.
You good with that motion? Okay, seconded by Ken. Okay, any discussion on that before we vote? Okay, all in favor? Okay, that's unanimous. Okay.
I'll take a stab at one.
Okay.
This, there's two, 16C2 and 16C1, Central Mountain Southwest Manti. One is 4%, 4-tag increase, and one is a 6-tag increase. It seems like that's the most contentious unit. You got mule deer competing. You got all these interests. What if we reduced both of those by half by way of a compromise, so 2 and 3?
So which unit specifically?
It's listed twice. Southwest Manti, Central Mountain Southwest Manti, 16C2 and 16C1.
Okay.
Turns out lions need to eat deer to survive, and I like to see both on the hills, so...
All right, so your motion is for the Central Mountain Southwest...
To increase...
Or Central Manti.
To increase the one unit by two instead of four, and the
Which
other
unit
by three...
Let's be clear.
For... Well, it's listed twice on the sheet.
They're different units.
Southeast and Southwest.
Oh, I'm sorry. So I'm sorry. Southeast would be two, and Southwest would be three.
Why don't we tackle those as two separate motions? Because I suspect you need a different discussion on that. So why don't you take them one at a time?
I make a motion that Southeast is moved to an increase of two.
Okay. Does that motion make sense, Stacy? Okay, so the
increase by two tags.
Increase by two tags.
Instead of four.
And that's the Southeast.
Yep.
Okay, do I have a second on that? Okay, that motion fails.
I'll make a motion to increase Southwest by three instead of six.
Okay, the Central Manti Southwest increase by three instead of six is the motion. Did you get that, Stacy? Debbie, sorry.
Anti.
Debbie. Okay, do I have a second on that?
I'll second that.
Okay, George seconds. Any other discussion on that?
That's on Southwest.
Southwest. Okay, let's take a vote. All in favor? All opposed? That motion fails, 3-5.
Who opposed?
So, Christine?
There was six.
Oh, was there six?
Opposed. 3-5 makes eight. You say eight would be unanimous.
Right, I thought I had it. Okay, let's re-vote that. So, all in favor of that? Motion. There's three. All opposed. It's Christine, Ben, AJ, Mike, and Ken. Dan, George, and Josh were four.
I've got two more.
Okay, hold on. So Debbie, are you good? Is there anything we need to clarify? Before we move on?
Okay, let me just look back to you.
Okay.
Josh, you need a motion to increase. Which unit was that?
Southwest Manti.
Well, there was two.
The first one was east.
The first one was the Central Manti Southeast by two permits. That motion failed. Did not have a second.
Which means instead of four?
Correct.
And that failed, right?
Correct.
No,
there was no second. That's why it failed. Yep.
Okay, and the second one?
Central Manti Southwest to increase by three tags instead of six.
George.
Correct. And you've got the
motion favors.
The motion?
Dan and Josh.
Correct. All right. You good? Okay.
Can I make a motion? I'll make a jab.
Okay.
Like you said, we got everybody's concerns here. We got a lot of support on both sides. I make a motion, we just leave it as is.
I think it's 12 tags. So, I can't see.
Oh, you mean all of the recommendations?
For the Southwest Manti.
Right now, that's where it's at. So
just leave it.
That'll fall into the balance.
Right. So if we approved all the recommendations, that would stay as is.
Yeah.
Do we have any other amendments to the recommendations before we move on?
I do. I'd like to make a motion to not increase any tags on the Oak or Stansberry and the West Desert Tintic Vernon units.
Okay. So, Debbie, does that one make sense?
Increase on the Oakers.
The Oakers.
The Oak or Stansberry and the West Desert Tintic Vernon.
I'll second that.
Okay. And then Dan seconds. Are you good, Debbie? Okay. Any discussion?
Yes.
All right. Go ahead.
I've heard the arguments on the Vernon, but I don't recall hearing any arguments on the Oak or Stansbury. Can you clarify as to why?
Yeah, on the Oak or Stansbury, I don't think it's the lions affecting the bighorn sheep up there. I think the bighorn sheep up there are not doing good because it's not, they're just not doing good, period. I don't think it's a result of the mountain lion. You're already going to have 12 tags there.
They, really quick.
For that, so that's more than enough for the Stansberries, at least.
I think the reason for that is it had a die-off of disease, and they have just transplanted a new herd back out there. So until that herd's reestablished, they're trying to keep the
cattle. What I'm saying is it's not an outlying issue. It's a disease issue. It's a disease issue.
But there's a new herd that's not diseased that they're putting out there.
Right. There's a new
herd. Is the reason
transplant.
For that.
Can you speak? Yeah, we've got the biologist here for that unit. I'd love to hear his viewpoint.
Well, and it is a new population of bighorn sheep.
Pull your mic down, huh?
Oh, I'm not as tall as Darren. I also want, for the record, I am wearing a tie, which you don't see very often. But the Stansbury is a new population of bighorn sheep. We just put them out there this last winter. We've already had three losses due to cougars. We had some issues in trying to get assistance in removing those cats, and we had people holding tags and didn't go out and harvest cougars. There seems to be a feeling that some of the locals want to keep the population the way they think it should be. And now when we put bighorns back in, it changes everything. So harvest is a little different because I think some of the guys were holding tags and didn't go out and harvest. But we could have easily, I did switch it from limited entry to a split season, basically to try to put more pressure and get the harvest I need. Bighorns, I can't really afford guys holding on to tags right now until we get those bighorns established again. We put very few, I guess the percentage of ewes that were put out was a lot lower than we anticipated, and so it's a little ram heavy, and we lost a few of the ewes due to some disease and shock in the transplant, but we also have lost a couple due to cats. So I need to put a little more pressure on those cats that are in that unit. And that's why there's a slight increase. It's the increase still stays within the guidelines, but it also, with the split season, I'm able to get a harvest objective and count on some harvest.
But Tom, had those people filled their tags? It really isn't a tag number issue. It's a communication
The increase was more in response to the parameters that we have. There is room if you look at the harvest of females and males and the age. There is room for an increase. But technically, I really could have probably gone to a predator management plan, which might have increased the permits even more because it is a new population of bighorn sheep and it's well below the objective. Didn't want to go there. Because the population is pretty much just on the north end of the Stansbury, it's not the entire unit. But I need to get some pressure and some harvest and maybe push some guys into that north half, which I wasn't getting. So that's the increase, and it's just two permits. So it might seem like a lot when you look at the percentages, but when you look at the loss of bighorn sheep on a new population, it's devastating.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Tom. Something up?
Yeah. Thank you for the clarification there. My opinion, given what was just said by Tom, as well as the fact that Bighorn sheep are a sensitive species that require all the help they can get. We've got a brand new population there, and they've already been impacted by some of the lions. I think the division's right in line on the recommendations.
Do we have an appetite to divide up those two into two different motions, or? Okay, I'm not seeing any head nodding, so.
But we had a second.
We did have a second. We'll take a vote on it, but I just.
Can you remind us of the motion?
I'm just wondering if there's an appetite to split up.
I don't know what the motion was.
The motion, could you repeat the motion, George, to do no increase on the ochre Stansberry?
No increase in tags on both the ochre Stansberries and the West Desert Tinted Bird.
Right. Do we have an appetite to split those up? Okay, I'm not seeing much of an appetite for that. So, okay, George made the motion. I think, Dan, you seconded that. Okay. Any other discussion on that before we take a vote? Okay. All in favor? So you got three affirmatives. Got those, Debbie? All opposed? Okay, that motion fails. So Christine, Dan, and George all voted in the affirmative. Okay, I'll entertain another motion.
I'm going to make a motion to accept the division's recommendation for reducing tags on the Ogden, Wasatch Mountain Cascade, and Wasatch Mountains Timpanogos.
If it's okay, Josh, what I'd like to do is entertain any amendment motions. If there are no amendments, then just recommend to accept all of the recommendations, if you would.
I'll make a motion that we accept the division's proposal, the remainder of it,
okay,
as presented.
Okay. Seconded by Ben. You got that, Debbie? Okay. Any other discussion on that? Mike?
I think we misinterpreted AJ's motion previous.
Okay.
So I don't know if we should address that before.
Fair enough.
His motion, since he made it first. AJ was trying to state that there be no increase on the Southwest Manti. That was what he was trying to say, and then it got muddled up by other RAC members to just pass it with a balance and it'll be okay. But there's a recommended increase of 6.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right, AJ?
Okay, so, I thought he said to support the division's recommendations on specific units. That's what I thought I heard. So, Josh, do you have an amendment to the tool?
If I was to amend, I would say let's make motion to have 0 increase on the Southwest.
Okay, so
we have a motion.
We have a motion on the table. We do, but we've got to address. I wanted to make sure to address any amendments before we approve the balance. So if we could put that the vote to approve the balance on hold and address Josh's amendment prior to that.
I'll make that motion and do just that.
Okay, great.
You've got to make a motion to do that.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't know if that's the case, but...
Yeah, I think this is getting confusing. I think you need to go back again.
Well, if we approve his motion, then no amendments would be allowed at that point.
You'd ask Ken if he's willing to withdraw his motion to address this issue.
Okay. Ken, would you be willing to withdraw your motion so that Josh could make a motion?
Yes, I will.
Thanks, Ken. I appreciate that. Josh, could you please make a proposal?
Is this the 7th time I made the motion or the 8th? I can't remember. I make a motion that there's a 0% increase on Southwest Manti.
Okay. Motion that there is no increase on the Central Manti Southwest unit.
No, I'll second that so we can move ahead.
All right. Dan seconds. All in favor? Okay, all opposed? Okay, that passes.
62.
Yeah, 62. And Ben opposed. All right, I appreciate that, Ken. I think it's important that we get it right. More important than following procedure. Okay, so do I have another motion? Mike?
I'll make a motion that we accept the balance of the division's proposal as presented.
Okay, have a second. Ben? Debbie, you good with that? Yeah, Ben seconded. All right, all in favor? All opposed? All right, so that's a split.
Yeah, sure.
Right, so before I vote, is there a reason why there was ascending votes to that?
Assenting or dissenting?
Not voting against that.
I feel like this predator management issue is controversial on so many levels. And I know there's a lot of interest, but when you got guys out there killing the most predators telling you this is the wrong move, I got to go with those guys. And I know they eat deer, and I've been hunting my entire life, and I want to see as much wildlife as I can, and one day maybe I'll shoot a cougar if I get the opportunity. But I gotta go with that group. And I know it goes against the division's sound science. I'm not challenging the science at all. I think we just need a longer view instead of having this conversation every year. Maybe we should move it to every two, and maybe we'll address that in the review. But
didn't we just address their issues, though, on the Southwest Manta?
Yeah, we've made some. Is there any other reason why we voted not to approve the balance of the changes?
Yeah, I agree entirely with Josh.
Okay.
Yeah, and I didn't get approval on my two units, so that's why I declined the whole thing.
All right. So I think we've worked hard here to come to a compromise and to work through this. I think we've probably come as far as we're going to come. So I'm going to go ahead and vote to approve those changes and break that tie.
Can you tell us the numbers you voted for?
Yeah, sure. So who was the four to approve the balance of the recommendations? So Ben, AJ, Mike, and Ken. No, she voted opposed. I was so the against are Christine, Dan, George, and Josh. Mm-hmm.
Chris, can I make another motion before we move on?
Unfortunately, we just approved.
Well, no, this is not in regards to. This is a different motion outside of that. I'd like to make a motion that the division look at the management plan under review and consider in committee, have a conversation, invite the stakeholders to move this to a two-year move without any changes, as opposed to every year.
I'll second that, because that's the point that I meant about the Ricky jerkiness,
Okay. Any discussion on that? Go ahead, Ben.
Darren wants to speak, but we'll probably say similar things. We're already taking into account a three-year trend. There's no reason for this. That's my comments. Darren, please.
The only thing I was going to say that, but also, Mike, I think the committee's intent was that this would be on a three-year cycle, so it would be like a three-year guidebook. We tried that, and it, people just can't leave it alone. they just cannot let it go for 3 years without bringing something up, and so we kind of threw up our hands and said, "Okay, we'll just go with it." But that's just the history. And Mike, if I'm wrong, let me know. I thought that was what the committee wanted to try and do.
There was some discussion of that on the committee that people wanted to be more reactive both ways.
Right.
And so I think that's why. So.
Well, and we tried the same thing with bears. That was supposed to be a 3-year guidebook and same thing, and never was. It was addressed every year. So.
Well, there is a motion to move it to every 2 years with a second. So.
Yeah, there's a motion. I just wanted to hear some discussion.
And okay with that, Debbie?
You know, okay. and in that discussion, you know, 2 years seems to me to be a kind of a compromise from the three. You know.
Okay, so we got a motion.
Halfway between one and three is two.
Okay, so we got a motion on the table. Does everybody understand that motion? Any other discussion? Okay, all in favor? All opposed? Okay, so... You guys are all going to owe Debbie a big apology by the end of the night. Send her flowers or a card or something.
Four was Christine, Danny, George, and Josh. Is that right?
Again.
Ben, AJ, Mike, and Ken. Okay, you good, Debbie? All right. I'm going to go ahead and break that tie. As somebody that's worked on management plans in the past, I know how much work and discussion goes into them. And I couldn't in good conscience vote to monkey with the current plan at this time, so I'm going to vote against that.
Next item?
Okay, I think so. Everybody ready to move on? Great. All right, next item and last item, and we're hopefully this one will be less.
I only got about 75 slides, or, so, you know.
All right, Kimberly, it's all yours.
I know how to clear a room. Exactly. There you go.
I would be offended if everybody left for my reason.
I know, I'm hurt.
Oh my God.
All right. I'm going to be presenting a few proposed amendments on our sensitive species rule. And since this is a rule that really doesn't come up for discussion very often, I wanted to give you a little bit of background on it and what the reasoning for it is. First, the goal of the sensitive species rule is to reduce the likelihood of the need for Endangered Species Act listing to keep management of wildlife in Utah with the state. It guides the management practices of wildlife, and we also really want to conserve the diversity of wildlife that's found in Utah. And so to do this, we identify species that are in need of conservation attention. And conservation attention takes many forms. It can be, you know, traditional wildlife management of harvest, of dealing with disease, of translocation, habitat restoration. If you're considered a sensitive species, you're considered in our impact analysis process to helpfully reduce the impact of potential projects on the species, and it also helps direct funding to those species that we feel need it the most. So what is a sensitive species rule not? It is not regulatory in the same way that the Endangered Species Act is. We're really working towards voluntary, proactive conservation measures rather than, you know, outright prohibiting take of species. And in the same way, sensitive species designations may not be used by governmental entities as a basis to involuntarily restrict the private property rights of landowners and their leases or permittees. So which species are on the list? First, they have to be native wildlife species or subspecies found in the state. They have to have either undergone substantial declines in population size or distribution, or we feel like they'd likely undergo those declines without proper management. We feel that this cooperative management and intervention or mitigation of threats is needed to keep populations in line. Currently, there's just north of 100 species that are on the list, and just the breakdown by group. So how does a species get on the list? First, the Division of Wildlife submits recommendations based on science, surveys, literature, and we also have to do an assessment of potential impacts that a designation could make on different interested parties. A Division of Natural Resource Committee then meets. That's headed by the executive director, currently Mike Styler. And it also has representatives from the governor's public land office, the heads of the Division of Wildlife, oil, gas, and mining, water resources, and any other department or division heads that the executive director feels needs to be there. Once they come to a conclusion based on that information, the executive director will then bring the proposed species to the Wildlife Board, and then the Wildlife Board makes the final decision. So what are the proposed changes that we're making? If you look through the rule, there's a lot of red lines there. But we just want to simplify and clean up the rule. And all those red lines really sort of lead to two different changes. The first is prior to these proposed changes, a lot of species are automatically added and removed to the list based on their Endangered Species Act status. So we have a group of conservation agreement species. We have a group of threatened species. We want to have just one designation of a sensitive species that goes through this committee. You're voted on and off of the list. We also want to remove a lot of language regarding wildlife habitat designations. Quite honestly, in the 17 years that this current rule has been in place, this has never been used, and so we just don't feel like it needs to be there any longer. And just to finish up, I want to point out that the sensitive species list has resulted in a lot of conservation successes. Many species that are on the sensitive species list have been petition for Endangered Species Act listings. We have about 20 not warranted findings because we've been able to show that the state is managing these species and populations are doing well enough. And only 3 listings during that time period. We also have down listing, which means from going from endangered species to threatened status, and delisting is just working species off the endangered species list in progress. So we really feel like this proactive conservation approach works, and we just want to make sure that our sensitive species rule is able to respond to that. And with that, I'd like to thank you and take any questions and just point out that all these species on this slide have been petitioned for listing and were found not warranted.
All right, REC members, any questions? Dan.
Question, comment. First, I'd like to applaud your efforts of streamlining that document. As someone who's worked for 11 years on an endangered species issue here in Utah, I thought it was really cleaned up. It made it so much simpler to follow, and all those red lines are awesome. So that's my comment.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, John.
Go ahead, Christine.
I was just wondering, with the Trump administration's motion to adjust the Endangered Species Act, how does that affect what you're going to do? Is it going to have any impact?
No impact at all. These are completely separate processes.
Yeah.
I was just curious about a rationale question. Why the change from species of concern to sensitive species? What did the division feel like was the rationale for that?
Overall, it's just been referred to as the sensitive species list, and the sensitive species included all of the other things under there. So I think rather than pointing out the species of concern, it just goes back to sensitive species, which has been used more frequently.
Gotcha. Cool. Thanks.
Any other questions? Mike?
I just want to say that I appreciate all the work you guys do on this regard. I think we get hung up on game species so much, but this is the kind of work that really protects the state. So I appreciate all you do.
Any other questions? Okay, great. Turn it over to the public for questions. Do you have any questions? No, you're good. All right. Oh, he's not even. He just. All right. I don't have any comment cards on this, amazingly. So we'll turn it back over to the RAC for discussion and a motion. Go ahead, Dan.
Well, I think we ought to accept all of that because it really did, as I said earlier, it really did just amazingly streamline the whole process, and eliminating that whole habitat issue was really a move forward, progressive move forward. So I'll make a motion that we support this.
Okay, good with that, Debbie? Okay, seconded by Christine. Okay, all in favor? Passes unanimously. I don't have to break that tie, so... That's it. Thank you. Thanks for the conversation tonight, everybody. See you next time.